You're listening to AM 1500 KSTP. In the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening from Cactus Country, Lizard City, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, and north, absolutely to the pole, worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. I'm Art Bell, and this is going to be an extremely interesting night, so buckle in. We have got Whitley Strieber, and so that everything is sort of, linear for Whitley, we're going to interrupt him at the beginning of the program with Peter Davenport. Shades of last Friday night, Saturday morning. When, of course, an object streaked across the northwest skies, in which direction? Well, we'll talk about that. And so everybody has, you know, wanted an update on this, and Peter Davenport is prepared to give one. It is going to be an interesting report in that Peter has not quite made the jump, but he is close to making the jump to suggesting, apparently, that this was not what it appeared to be, and that we may not have been told the full story. Let's put it that way. Then Whitley Strieber will be here, and we have many, many things to do with Whitley. Really, it was a show we didn't get to do last Friday night, Saturday morning, because of all that occurred. We're going to be bringing people on from Glen Rock, Wyoming. There is quite a story to be told there, and Whitley will tell that. Then we will have on with Whitley, Dr. Roger Lear, who is a pioneering implant surgeon. I said implants. Remember, Whitley has a implant in his ear. He recently had surgery performed to have it removed, and the surgeon in question said the damn thing moved when he got near it with a scalpel. They got a little piece of it, apparently, but it moved. It actually moved, according to the surgeon. And we may even hear from that surgeon tonight as well. And Whitley has much more to tell us about, so it's a very full night. Otherwise, in the news, looks like Iraq has indicated it's going to allow U.S. weapons inspectors to return and do their duty. There will be no preconditions. In other words, they are caving in, no doubt, as the F-117s cross the ocean toward Iraq, which they're doing at this hour. Iraq has begun to imagine that we are serious. And so it looks like that is going to be resolved diplomatically. If you consider F-117s and B-52s and aircraft carriers diplomacy, and certainly it is diplomacy of a sort. So that is the main news worth hearing, and it looks like it's going to get settled. Now, the following from Reuters News. Check this out, folks. Chile's Air Force has appointed a committee to compile reports on, guess what, UFOs and other unusual aerial occurrences, according to a government spokesman. A spokesman for Chile's Air Force-run Civil Aviation Authority confirmed a report, I said confirmed, published by the daily La Tercera about the creation of a three-member committee for the study of anomalous aerial phenomena. He said the committee would not take reports from ordinary people who claim they've seen flying saucers, but rather from what the Air Force considers more reputable sources. Quote, we have control tower operators and pilots who have seen these objects. And so the bottom line, folks, is Reuters is saying that Chile, a little bitty country that probably does not have the national budget that sustains one of our major cities in this country, is going to do that which we will not do and study UFOs. Isn't that interesting? Coming up in a moment, Whitley Strieber and Peter Davenport. They'll recall each other well from last week. Due to call.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. All right, now, let us recall our last Friday night, Saturday morning, when we began with Whitley Strieber. Whitley, are you there? Hello, Whitley.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. I wanted to keep everything linear, you know, kind of the way it was last week.
Yep.
And so we began with your voice, and we started to do your report, and then boom!
Boom. Well, we're going to begin with my voice again tonight, but this time we're going to go shortly to Peter Davenport.
Well,
and we all know what's going on.
Yes, that's right. So, Whitley, hang tight. To give us just a little idea, we're going to Glen Rock, Wyoming at some point for a story.
We're going to Glen Rock, Wyoming later to listen to one of the... I think it's probably one of the places in the United States where there has been more sightings and close encounters than practically anywhere, and it's so far totally unknown. It's an amazing story, and we will end the Glen Rock story by listening to the audio from a piece of videotape that was made by some of the witnesses who will be on the air. They did not know that they were during this videotape. It was literally made during missing time, and right at the end of the tape, there's a fascinating moment when one of them seems to lapse into a totally unknown language. It's a really interesting piece of tape.
Okay, so we'll do that. We'll talk to a doctor, a very famous doctor, Roger
right.
Lear.
Dr. Roger Lear after that, and possibly the surgeon who did my surgery. If he can get, I believe he's at the hospital now, and if he can get some time off duty, he will call in.
And then if we have any time left, we can talk about Mexico. And you just heard the story I read about Chile.
Yes, I did.
Isn't it a little embarrassing that a little country like Chile is doing what we refuse to do?
Well, I think they have no reason to be afraid of their own people anymore. I mean, Chile has become a democracy.
Yes, I have high hopes that's ahead for us, too.
Yes, one of these days.
All right, Whitley, so that everything is linear, I hereby interrupt you. Stand by and let us go, as we did last Friday night, Saturday morning, up to Seattle and the UFO Reporting Center, the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. Here is Peter Davenport. Peter?
Good evening, Art, and hello, Whitley.
Whitley, say hi. Okay, Whitley's actually, Whitley, say hi to Peter.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
Good evening, Whitley. How are you?
Good to be on with you again.
Good to, right. Yes, this is, it's deja vu.
Yeah, well, it was very exciting last Friday night, and I think you've got some remarkable things to tell us again tonight.
Well, it's gotten even more interesting, and I'm absolutely delighted to be back this soon, because a lot of water has crossed the dam since our first report from up here on Friday night.
And a lot of emails. I've been getting nothing but email after email after email, Peter,
yeah,
wanting an update on what the hell happened this past Friday.
Absolutely.
Okay, hold on just one sec here. Go ahead. There you go, Peter. Let me do this a different way. I'm going to have to do this a different way. Let's see. We'll do that, and we'll do this. And there you are. I think, Peter, you should be there.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, yes, we're in the same boat, Art. We've been receiving probably hundreds of email requests every day about the data, and I apologize. I haven't been able to respond to all of them, but there could be no better way to answer many of them than over coast to coast, and I'm really delighted to have an opportunity this soon. A lot has happened, and if we have a few extra seconds towards the end of the report, I'd like to play about a 15-second cut.
Oh, we do.
From a gentleman who saw those objects go directly over his head. He was camped high in the Olympic Mountains, and these things went right over him, and he has a magnificent description of what he saw early in the sighting.
To update everybody who wasn't here, it began a little bit after 9 o'clock when hundreds, thousands of people began to call me and everybody else, Seattle TV stations and Vancouver, and everybody was seeing something. And the stories varied, but the phones wouldn't quit. It went absolutely nuts. That's the background just about a week ago.
Yeah. And it was a dramatic sighting over northern Washington to boot. I understand that 911 facilities all across the state were just humming. It's a wonder that the telephone system held up under it. But to give our listeners who may not already know our just a brief synopsis of what happened, people in Seattle looking to the north or maybe a little bit west of north saw a long, long smear of intensely bright lights moving across the sky, roughly from southwest to northeast is what everybody said, everybody but the U.S. Air Force, a few hours later. And the interesting thing about it, and I'll talk more about that later in my report, is all of the lights, at least to most viewers, appeared to be moving at a regular pace. In other words, the formation of lights was pretty much immutable, unchangeable, as it moved across the sky, at least as most people reported it to us. Now, since my report on Friday evening, we've gotten a gargantuan quantity of data, thanks to many people who've called in and sent e-messages and reports over our website. And the pieces, the dust is finally beginning to settle and the pieces are falling in place. Yeah. And I must say, whereas early on I didn't know what we were dealing with, following the U.S. Air Force report Friday night and again early Saturday morning, I began to wonder whether maybe it was just nothing more than a routine, though dramatic, reentry of space debris. I'm now, as you properly reported earlier, I am now beginning to gravitate to the pole that this was not merely a reentry event. For example,
Mark, Peter, let me interrupt and just say, yep, the Air Force and NORAD both reported that this object fell into the Pacific Ocean.
That's correct. That's my understanding, Art.
Now, what you have documented and compiled flies right in the face of that, doesn't
absolutely
it?
Now, moreover, they reported that the debris was going from east to west.
Yes.
In point of fact, it was going precisely the opposite direction. Now, just yesterday, I talked to a senior officer in the public information office at NORAD. Very nice guy.
Right.
He was willing to help to the greatest degree he was able, and he is now working on a few of the questions I put to him. Of course, the Air Force said the booster was an SL-12 Russian booster. I think that's otherwise known as a proton booster.
Right.
The officer told me yesterday that that booster had been launched out of Russia, to the best of his knowledge, on the 12th of November. I've recently received data suggesting that the proton booster, and I may err on this point, people I understand can get information about it off the website or off the internet, is an older rocket. We're going to do some work on this and try to find out exactly when that booster was launched, where it was launched from, what time it was launched, what the launch criteria were, what direction it went, all of those in data points that we need to establish, we feel, whether the story coming out of NORAD is in point of fact accurate.
So, Peter, you're telling me, if I'm hearing this correctly, that you've got to go to the Russians to get information that you're not getting from NORAD?
That's what we're doing. It's not that we're not getting information from NORAD, although this officer did apprise me of the fact. I can almost quote him, Art. He said he was a little uncomfortable sharing this data with somebody in the civilian sector.
Really?
This is just routine space data, so far as I can tell. But it is our intention. In fact, we have already initiated a process to try to get the information from the Russians on the actual facts surrounding this launch, so we can simply corroborate what the Air Force has represented.
Peter, is it worth asking the following? NORAD is the North American Air Defense Command.
Yep.
Now, these are the guys who watch missile launches and watch movement of aircraft, blah, 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 and if Russia should ever launch or China or something, they would track the missiles that were headed toward the U.S.,
yep,
destroying those that they could before they hit us, and so forth and so on. Now, that's a pretty important job. NORAD tracked the objects going east to west, which we clearly know that simply wasn't true. How comfortable are you with that?
Well, somebody made a mistake at NORAD, I think, Art. Somebody was on duty, and they maintain a 24-hour presence even in their public information office.
Yeah, but this was one object, Peter. If we ever got into a war and we had hundreds of ICBMs coming in with multiple warheads...
Yes. This is why it is so terribly important in this case, I feel, to establish whether the Air Force did, in fact, warn or issue a forewarning to anybody, whether in the government or in the civilian sector, to let us know. Because they didn't, the one thing I'd like to know is how frequently do these missiles fly over the North American continent without forewarning?
Yes.
So that is clearly a germane point to this investigation. Now, in talking with the officer yesterday, I discovered that, well, it was his firm belief that the Air Force never said that the debris was flying from east to west or that the rocket was flying from east to west. He said that's clearly absurd.
Really?
I agreed with him readily. Everybody knows that satellites always fly from west to east or in polar orbits,
yes,
north to south or south to north.
Yes.
So we would, if there's anybody out there listening to our voices tonight who can direct us to actual video footage or audio footage from official members of the U.S. Air Force, having that individual or those people actually say the debris was going from east to west, please contact us in Seattle on our hotline. We would like to know how we can lay our hands on that footage. But we're pursuing the data through other channels as well, and we're going to get to the bottom of this. I'm very uncomfortable in a circumstance in which the American military may not be being absolutely forthright with the American people, particularly on an issue that doesn't appear to have any defensive nature to it, if you will. Any
security aspects.
Security aspects, exactly.
Well, but then maybe it does. I mean, there are only one of two possibilities about what happened last Friday night. One is that they know what it is, and they're not interested in letting us know what it was.
Yes.
Or they're not competent to know what it was, and I'd much rather believe the first.
Yes. Yes. We know that the Air Force is capable of concealing facts. This happened over Arizona or down at Luke Air Force Base specifically on the 13th or 14th of March this year.
Yes.
They did not square with the American people.
Is that the way the incident above Seattle and Vancouver and points east is now beginning to shape up? Is it beginning to look like another Phoenix?
It is my suspicion that it may turn out to be that, but this is part of the reason we haven't released a preliminary statement yet, because we want the facts, Art. When we release our statement, we want to have corroboration in hand that hopefully is incontrovertible. That's one of the issues I thought I would raise during this brief program tonight, is if anybody saw those lights, particularly people up in Canada who might have been looking south at the lights, we would particularly like a very short one or two paragraph description from them with a drawing of what they saw. That would be very helpful to us.
It would be, and we need it. But, Peter, I've got to tell you, incontrovertible. They're still capable of making a remark like, well, it was time compression or witness fog or, you know, who knows what they might say about it. I don't think it matters how definitive it is. If they don't want to tell us what it is, they will not do so.
That's true. And this is one of the reasons I get sort of short-tempered with people who, ufologists who do nothing but work with Freedom of Information Act requests, because, as you say, I think it's correct. If the government doesn't want us to know, the government isn't going to let us know. And I was thinking back to your earlier comments about Chile,
yeah,
and their new committee. Isn't it at least lamentable, and I would go so far as to say somewhat frightening from my vantage point, to live in a country like ours where we purport to be free,
yep,
where we purport to have a representative government which is sensitive to our wishes, the mere citizens, and yet Chile, a much smaller country,
Chile, yes,
much less sophisticated defense establishment.
Also, you know, their press asked questions. I like that about Chile and other countries.
Yeah.
Anyway, soon maybe with luck we'll be a democracy. Stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, I
Art Bell is talking to first-time callers at area code 702-727-1222. That's area code 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye. Now again, here's Art.
That's me. Hello there, everybody. That's Ross Mitchell, voice of God from KOH in Reno, my affiliate in Reno. If you are one of the poor unfortunates out there who has not yet moved into the computer age, please stop and listen to me for a second, all right? For example, right now, if you'll go to my website at www.artbell.com, you will see, click on the studio cam, and you will see what I am going to be doing, or my wife is going to be doing, this week. And if you don't think we're going to have fun with that, I'm holding something up. I'll leave it up for about a half hour on the studio cam where you can actually see me doing the show about every 45 seconds. It clicks a photograph and sends it off to the masses out there so you can see me doing the show. I try not to do things that would catch me in a funny position. Anyway, look, everything, everywhere you turn is the internet, from my website to everybody else's, and just about everybody has one now, so you should have a computer. But I, better than anybody, understand computers can be the most frustrating damn things on the face of the globe. It's a love-hate relationship. I love them, but I hate them when I can't figure them out. Senior Computer Systems is different. It's a company, and I mean it's really different. I've checked them out. The concept is, well, it's not just a concept. It's a reality. It's here now. Here's the deal. You get an ultra-fast computer with built-in, one-on-one, live assistance. Now, does this mean a little guy lives inside your computer? No. But here's the deal. Suppose you're attempting to, you just get started, get your computer. You want to send email, right? You're stuck. You simply push the F12 key on your computer, and presto, you've got the SCS Tech Center's Help Genie. Genie! It's a real live person by modem who actually looks at your computer screen and shows you precisely what to do. They tell you. They talk to you. The Genie will help you with your email, show you how to surf the net, how to communicate with others who share your interests. The SCS computer has plenty of memory and storage space, is easily upgraded when you want to do that. As computers change, the full package comes with, get this, monitor, printer, 13 software programs, including Windows 95.
I'm still here.
Good. Here, let me read this to you, Peter. Hi, Art, about Chile. Yes, their government is setting up a committee, and ours isn't. But even if our government did set up a committee on UFO study, I wouldn't trust them anyway. Would you? I think your show and organizations like Peter Davenport's are far more trustworthy as public entities than the government would ever be. That's Jerry in Ogden, Utah.
Yeah. He could not have extended to me a greater compliment.
Well, it is sadly, I mean, I'm a great fan of yours, Peter, but it's sadly true. It's sadly true. Anyway, Peter, go ahead.
Let me give just a thumbnail sketch of where those objects went Friday night to give our listeners some idea of what happened. They came across the shore of western Washington in from the Pacific, somewhere over the town of Queets or Moclips. In fact, if anybody out in western Washington had them come across the shore right over their heads, we'd like to hear from those people because we are trying to reconstruct the actual ground track. The vision, the scene was so dramatic. We have a report that there was a law enforcement organization down in southwestern Washington that had all of their police out in a parking lot watching this object as it went streaming across the sky. But it moved to the northeast over Olympic National Park, and in a minute or so I'll play a report we got from a gentleman high up in those mountains. They moved then north of Lummi Island towards Vancouver, British Columbia, and it's there that we think they took their second turn. Because whereas they apparently had been going to the northeast as they approached Vancouver, they then went down the Canadian border between Canada and Washington, because we have people all along the northern tier of Washington State, Leavenworth, Concrete, Tenasket, Methow, Nine Mile Falls. These are all towns that everybody in the state of Washington knows.
Peter?
Yeah.
You said turn, right?
Yes.
Now, space junk could conceivably turn. A hunk of space junk could conceivably turn,
yes,
depending on the aerodynamics of the wreckage.
Yes.
But all of the space junk wouldn't have the same aerodynamics and wouldn't turn together, would it?
It would not, and that leads me to another point that I think I alluded to on Friday, but we have now stronger confirmation of this, Art. All of the pieces that went down the Canadian border headed east went, reportedly, from all the reliable sources we have, seemingly reliable, they all moved at the same angular velocity. The formation remained constant. And in point of fact, it seems that the number of lights in the formation seems to have increased. Now, I'm quick to admit that that is fully consistent with a reentry event.
Breakup.
Yeah, the breakup. Like a shotgun of debris hitting the atmosphere.
Sure.
But some of the, in fact, some people have said all of the lights were paired with one another, side by each, and they were in a symmetrical, regular pattern moving across the sky. This is part of the reason we would like brief written statements from people who may have had a good look at this. They continued east. They crossed the Idaho border.
The Idaho border.
The Idaho border, and this is where it gets interesting, because we got a call from a woman. Linda Moulton Howe, of course, interviewed her Sunday night on Dreamland. We got a call from a woman who was driving home. She knows the precise time, Art. It was between 9:15 and 9:20. She and her 9-year-old son were stopped on the highway staring at 7 objects that were the shape of discs hovering motionless in a crystal clear night sky. 4 in a row on top, 3 in a row on bottom, she reports to us.
Hovering.
And they were each one of those, she called them discs, I'm using her term now, each one of them was about 20 times, she estimates, the diameter of Venus at its brightest. That's a pretty prominent object in the night sky.
Yes, it is.
And interestingly, her report takes us then back about perhaps 150 miles back to the east to the county of Okanagan in northern Washington state, because we got a very reliable call from a 911 facility out there that reported the same thing in that county. People were reporting 7, 8, 9, or perhaps as many as 10 red lights that were skulking all over that county.
My.
But that, in a nutshell, is what happened. One of the very interesting things about these things was the tail, the light that was streaming off the tail of these objects. It was very dramatic, and we were very interested to hear from people who may have seen those things go over their heads exactly what they saw. But what I would like to do, Art, is conclude with about a 15-second cut of what a gentleman describes from Olympic National Park. He was camped up there Friday night, and this is what he describes.
Okay, Olympic National Park, Peter, is where?
That is out west of Seattle on that big peninsula that forms the western end of the state of Washington.
Right, okay.
This guy was camped up there. I think he was on his own, and this is what he described to us just yesterday morning that went directly over his head when he was camped up there in the mountains. Here we go.
Lake Cushman. What'd you see, please, there?
Yeah, I went into the mountains that Friday night and was doing some driving, and I looked up and saw these about 5 or 6 that they were in a group. And there was one in the background that was zigzagging back and forth, and then there was sparks coming off the rear of these drafts or whatever they were. So I watched them for quite a while, but they were heading north, northeast.
Now, there are 2 things about his report. He goes on for another 15 minutes or so, but I think our listeners will get an idea about what he saw there. He saw a wedge-shaped formation, I believe he said, of fairly large objects. He described them the size of basketballs, although that's ambiguous, of course. You don't know how far away they were.
Sure.
Or how far away he had basketballs in his mind. But he said that the light was streaming off the tail of these objects. Now, everybody knows that when something, a ballistic body, comes into a fluid, in this case our atmosphere, it heats up. It is the nose of the object that will heat up, and sparks stream off the nose of it.
Off the front, yes.
That was not the case in this instance. Everybody reports to us that light and sparks were streaming out the back end of these things. If somebody has a different story to tell us, we'd sure like to hear from them, because we'd like to lay this one to rest once and for all.
Well, so in other words, you really didn't get any useful, definitive information from NORAD, did you?
Not yet, we haven't. I felt they were being cautious. I am not going to criticize them. They're military people operating under orders. They're looking forward to their next promotion, of course. They've perhaps been told precisely what they have to do, and that's what you do when you're in the military. Anybody who's been in knows that. So I'm not condemning them. They haven't done us any dirt at this point. It's just that we would like good, clear, crisp, clean, accurate data, unambiguous. We haven't made any unusual requests. All we want to know is when that Russian missile went up, what its launch criteria were, where it was headed, what its payload was, and so on and so forth.
Do you think it likely that you'll be able to get this information from the Russian government?
I think it's highly likely at this stage. Highly likely. But it's very dangerous in this business to try to predict things. We try to avoid that like we avoid the plague. And we will report once we get the good, hard, fast data that people can hang their hats on. That's the kind we like to deal in. It's a fairly rare commodity in this field we call ufology. But that's what we have to do to get to the bottom of a story like this. And it is an interesting story.
It is. And here's another question for you that people want to know about. We began to get reports toward the end of this incredible show we did with you and Whitley last week that there was wreckage located or found, some yes. even hundreds of pounds of wreckage or something. What happened to it? What's the story?
Yeah, isn't it interesting? If it is extant, if it's available, I certainly haven't heard about it. We got a report on Sunday afternoon that there was some 400 pounds of anomalous metal, let's call it. I presume it would have been the wreckage.
Yeah.
That was gathered from around Abbotsford, British Columbia. That's just north of Washington State.
Gathered. Who gathered it?
Well, that's another question. Do we have space debris gatherers now? I don't know who got it. But it was asserted to us that a TV station in Vancouver, B.C., was going to carry the footage Sunday afternoon. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But that's the type of footage, it seems to me, if it was really available, would spread pretty quickly. We would have seen it down in Seattle. I haven't seen it yet, but that's...
Well, I must tell you, CNN, the next day, the following day, on Saturday, finally, in the afternoon, Peter, began to cover the story. And you know what they said? They said, Space Junk provided an entertaining light show over the Northwest.
Yeah.
Entertaining light show.
Yeah. This happened to me back in March over the Arizona sightings, too. I tried to give those people the date. I tried to wake them up and alert them. I'm afraid that the American press, and I use this term with some reservation, but I'm going to do it anyway, they've turned into sort of milquetoast, toothless lapdogs. They trundle themselves off to the official government announcements. They
yes.
jot down what the government
yes.
bureaucrat tells them, and then they go put it in their reports. This is not the traditional American press.
It really is, or maybe it is now. And I want to be careful here because, of course, I'm on the air in Atlanta and CNN, and I love CNN. I really love CNN.
I'm not picking on any individual now. I'm alluding to all of them. That
but this was a serious event. I mean, we all took literally hundreds of calls. Thousands of people saw it. You said yourself, there's a police officer who might even be willing to go on the air.
Oh yes, he would be a good one, Art. He is one of our very best UFO investigators in the state of Washington. The guy is meticulous. He makes Hercule Poirot look careless in his approach to a crime, and I'll give you his name and address and phone number over your private line, and you can talk to him. He's collecting apparently some really good data down in the southwest corner of Washington, and that's where some of the interesting things really happened during this case. We even got another report from another very prestigious law enforcement officer. He doesn't want to be identified yet, so I'm going to leave him out of the picture, but he had a very, very good look at this.
Way far from being in, and the investigation continues. We're not just dropping this. We're not just going to let it go.
Yes, I'm glad. The jury is still out. I agree with that entirely. It may be shown to us in the near future that it was a nothing but a space debris event. I'm inviting the U.S. Air Force, if it's within their power, to provide us with the hard evidence, not just the statement, not just the assertion,
sure,
the conclusive facts that will allow us to reconstruct what happened and satisfy ourselves that everything is copacetic with this information.
All right. Entirely reasonable. If people have specific video, stills, or information, they can reach you by calling what number?
Area code 206 in Seattle, 722-3000. 206-722-3000, or they can go to our website, which is www.ufocenter, one word, ufocenter.com, and let me just throw out, Art, that we do not take commercial advantage of anybody's photographs. We'd be happy to share them with you for your website because you have such exposure there. We'd like permission to put them on our website, too. But if anybody got pictures or videotape of the objects, we'd certainly like an opportunity to take a look at them if they'd permit us.
My friend, I thank you. You are an invaluable resource, and I appreciate the follow-up, and I'll look forward to hearing anything else that comes your way about this incident.
Well, I thank you, and thanks most of all for the opportunity, Art. This is the best way I know of to get the word out to the American people, and they're the ones who deserve this story.
I agree, Peter. Thank you, and good night.
Thanks. Good night.
All right, that's Peter Davenport. Coming up shortly, Whitley Strieber, author of Communion, and so much more, with the rest of the night, and it is going to be, I promise you, fascinating. Let me take care of a little bit of business ahead of time here. The Sanjin ATS 909 is the best portable radio in the world. Now, if you're thinking about a good Christmas present for somebody, it doesn't get any better than this. I'll kind of roll through some of the features. It's small, about the size of a Sony 2010. It outperforms, in my opinion, the Sony 2010. All right, as well, it certainly outperforms the prestigious Grundig Satellite 700. I make it a hobby of mine to test radios, don't you know? And this is the one that I declare to be the best portable radio you can buy for any amount of money. Can spend more, but you can't get a better radio. Now, its sensitivity, its selectivity, the ability to hear weak signals and discern between strong and weak, so you can listen to the weak one if you want to, is the best there is. Single sideband coverage? Oh, yes. 40 hertz resolution in sideband, upper and lower individual filtering, 200 shortwave stations already built into the memories, phase lock loop digital tuning, exquisite sound quality. You want to buy somebody a really good present for Christmas? This is it. It was $269.95, and for a short while longer, while we have quantity, it's $259.95, and that price is not going to last. The number to call in the morning, 7:30 Pacific Coast Time, let's see, that'd be 10:30 Eastern Time, is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863, the Sea Crane Company. When it comes to information on extraterrestrials, if you're like me, you just can't get enough. And I'm telling you, you've got to see the spine-chilling video, Area 51, the Alien Interview. Thousands of my listeners have already ordered this 65-minute documentary video containing the most convincing color footage of government agents interviewing a space alien inside the infamous secret base at Area 51. Leaked to the public by a heavily disguised and very frightened man who's known only as Victor, this unedited video will leave your heart pounding. See for yourself why Victor fears government agents might kill him in retaliation for releasing the dramatic footage. Is it real? Judge for yourself. The cost is only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. You'll want to watch it over and over again. I have. To order, call 1-800-510-3420 right now. Allow 2 weeks for delivery. The video's been featured on Extra and Strange Universe, but you only got a little piece here, you get it all. You can get it through this offer only. 1-800-510-3420. Area 51, the Alien Interview. 1-800-510-3420. Call now.
You know, it'd be kind of fun to have Victor back on the air again and interview him again from some, God knows, undisclosed location someplace. I understand he's in deep hiding. I wonder if he would do that. All right, we are going to pause here at the top of the hour. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Whitley Strieber, barring anything streaking across our night skies, of course. And, oh my, do we have a story to tell you. We'll call it Whitley Strieber and the Glen Rock People. That'll be coming up right after the news. I'm Art Bell from the high desert with the cactus and the lizards. This is Coast to Coast AM.
It's the sound of lulling you to sleep or having your best friend at one of your jokes or spending a Sunday evening on your porch listening to or having yours jump into your lap when you come home. Simple things add so much to our lives. But do you know the four simple things you can do to actually add healthy years to your life? 1. Eat foods low in saturated fat and cholesterol. 2. Be physically active. 3. Watch your weight. And 4. Know your cholesterol numbers. It's just that simple to make sure you'll have many peaceful summers at the lake listening to them. And many cozy winter nights snuggling by the fire.
Every heart counts. Care about cholesterol. Call 1-800-575-WELL.
Oasis Market offers you the following winter survival tips. Wait until the lakes are completely frozen before going ice fishing. Don't park on the odd side of the street on an even snow day. You should, however, avoid gas tank freeze-off by keeping your tank full of quality FINA gasoline, coupled with heat gas tank additive from your friendly Oasis Market. Oasis Market has virtually everything you need for winter survival, including windshield wiper fluid, antifreeze, ice scrapers, brushes, and more. Remember, whatever road you're traveling on this winter, all roads lead to the Oasis.
While there, try a cup of Oasis Market's exclusive Dakota House Blend Coffee. Dakota coffee is brewed and served through AirPod brewers, allowing Dakota to always be fresh, hot, and never burned coffee. It's simply the finest coffee available anywhere.
And never, ever put your tongue on a frozen flagpole.
This is Art Bell. Hang on. There's more following the news on AM 1500 KSTP St. Paul, Minneapolis.
From ABC News, I'm Joe Vaughn. They listened, now we wait. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright after coming out of a meeting in Geneva with Russia's foreign minister.
We listened to Foreign Minister Primakov report on his conversations with the Iraqis and as a result of those expressed the hope that they would in fact announce a reversal of the decision tomorrow morning.
Newspapers in Baghdad say Saddam has briefed his ministers on the talks with the Russians, but there's nothing yet on reversing the order barring American weapons inspectors. Anticipating a defense that accused the Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski was mentally unstable during the year's package bombs were killing and injuring people, government prosecutors introduced some of his papers as evidence in his trial in Sacramento. ABC's Tom Schell says the papers quote Kaczynski as deciding to start killing people.
If, in fact, these are from the extensive writings the government says are Ted Kaczynski's, Kaczynski goes to great lengths to try to show that he is not a mental case, but he is just angry at society. And he thinks that the technology in society is trying to get him.
In papers filed by the defense, two psychiatrists portray Kaczynski as a tortured genius unwilling to acknowledge he's mentally ill. 7 new mouths to feed could soon fill the house of Bobby and Kenny McCoy in Carlisle, Iowa. Next door neighbor Jane Johnson says they'll be able to handle it.
Their faith in God is that's what got them through this. And that's what's going to get them through the rest of the the rest of their years with these new babies.
All the children, four boys and three girls, are reported in serious condition at Iowa Methodist Medical Center, but they're all doing better than anybody expected. And the doctor who headed the delivery team, Paula Mahone, is full of admiration for the mother.
Bobby's attitude's been awesome. She is a miraculous, she's a tremendous woman. I'm really glad to know her.
And all 40 specialists were part of the delivery team. You're listening to ABC News.
Hey, it's time to play What a Dope, the show where kids who smoke marijuana try to answer incredibly simple questions. Okay, for $100, what did you eat for breakfast, Brian?
I forget more.
Bad Brian. Let's move on. For $500, what is your first name? Debbie.
Brian.
I'm sorry, Debbie. The answer is Debbie, your own first name.
Really?
That's okay. Just try and concentrate for, two or three seconds, okay?
Okay.
Okay. For $1,000, what day comes after Sunday? Brian.
French toast.
That's incorrect, Brian. And guess what?
Give me hit, man.
You lose. Wow. Oh, wow, it's right, because marijuana has made you a complete imbecile.
I don't want to be that.
Hey, tune in again tomorrow, and remember, if you smoke marijuana,
you're awesome.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
It's night-night time in orbit for the crew members of the Space Shuttle Columbia, who rocketed into space a few hours ago on the Kennedy from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida for a 16-day mission. Those on the scene included ABC's Jim Slade.
After a spectacular launch, Columbia settled in where it's been 23 times before, on orbit, ready to begin a long ride. The six-member crew was unpacking equipment within an hour after their arrival, ready to concentrate on experiments designed to learn how humans and plants can live.
1500 KSTP.
Art Bell is taking your calls on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is. Here I am, and we have an adventure to take you through tonight. My guest is the internationally known Whitley Strieber. And Whitley, of course, authored the bestseller Communion about his abduction experiences. And he's had some quite remarkable ones. And there have been several books since, including Secret School and others. I will tell you all about them. But tonight, Whitley is going to tell you about something that occurred in Glen Rock, Wyoming. And we have witnesses. We'll cover that. We'll cover implants. We're going to have Dr. Roger Lear, who is probably the pioneer implant surgeon in this country. And we'll talk about implants, kind of like the one Whitley has. The most remarkable story was told last week. Some of you might not have heard it. Those of you new listeners in New York City would not have. Whitley, for years, has had an implant in his ear. And he endeavored to have it removed surgically. And when the surgeon got close to it with a scalpel, the damn thing moved. It moved. Those are the words of the surgeon. And if we're lucky, and we may be, that surgeon may also call in tonight. A lot of people sent me faxes saying, oh, come on, it moved. Well, they got a little piece of it, but indeed, the surgeon uttered those words that the implant actually moved away from the scalpel. So, Whitley Strieber, Wyoming, implants, and if we have time for it, Mexico City, and what's going on down there. Chile, the government of, has just announced it will begin officially studying UFOs. A sad saga indeed, when a little country with a budget less than many of our U.S. cities is able to do what we are, of course, able, apparently unwilling to do. So coming up in a moment, Whitley Strieber. Smart. Well, all right, here we go. Internationally known for his abduction experiences, for his writings on the subject. You should know the name Whitley Strieber from San Antonio. Here is Whitley. Whitley, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here, Art.
Whitley, rattle off, if you would, the books that you have authored, beginning, of course, with Communion.
Communion, its sequel Transformation, then Majestic about the Roswell incident, Breakthrough, then The Secret School about my childhood, and out right now is the Communion Letters, 100 letters taken from the thousands that have come into the Communion Foundation over the years. And I just found out that Comic Book Beyond Communion is out in the comic book stores last week, which is great. It's a really neat comic book from Caliber Comics. Coming out in May or before is Confirmation, the Hard Evidence of Aliens Among Us, that, among other things, is going to prove that the cover-up is real and is going to take this whole controversy to another level.
Well, I remember last week you used the word ghettoized, that a ufology
right.
has been ghettoized. And so you're all about de-ghettoizing it.
We're coming out of the ghetto. They can't keep us in it anymore. We've got too much on our side.
All right.
Too much information and too much proof.
What the heck happened in Glen Rock?
Okay, for me, this story starts on August the 27th, 1986. I'm in my house in upstate New York, my little cabin, and there are 9 powerful knocks on the side of the house, in sequenced in 3 groups of 3. It frightens the dickens out of me. By this time, I've already had the communion experience. I am struggling with this and still not at all sure whether it's even physically real or not. This is the most physical thing that has ever happened.
When you say knocks, do you mean like knocks on the door, or do you mean bangs, or what do you mean?
Loud bangs, incredibly precise, as if a 70-pound fist was hitting the logs on the side of the house with absolute precision. I think if I had a tape recorder on, the time between those knocks probably would have been exactly the same to the millionth of a second. It was startlingly machine-like in its perfection.
All right.
The animals, the 2 cats in the room, reacted very strangely with a whole series of bizarre movements that I didn't even know that they were capable of. I wrote about this all in Transformation. Incredibly enough, exactly 18 months to the day later, February the 27th, 1988, the same thing happened to Glen Rock, Wyoming. Let me read to you from the Glen Rock Independent, Thursday, March the 3rd, 1988. "We, our knockings, disturb Glen Rock snoozer Saturday. Strange unexplained noises interrupted the slumber of many Glen Rock residents early Saturday morning. The 3-part series of 3 dull thuds at 2:45 a.m. was reported by many residents who believed it was made by direct physical contact on the outside of their dwellings." Now, one of those residents, Jamie, has actually heard these sounds, is here with us now. Darren Young, who grew up in Glen Rock and can tell us a lot of this extraordinary town's amazing stories, is with us. And we have someone else with us, Marla. And Marla is done, I think, one of the most unique things that anyone has ever done, quite by accident. She and Jamie and some other women were traveling on a road near Glen Rock at one point. They noticed a very unusual cloud. They took a video of that cloud without having any memory of taking the video.
Well, that's weird.
Arrived where they were going and realized they had some missing time. The video, they took some photographs of the cloud also, which they remembered doing. The video was taken during missing time.
During missing time, as
during
in...
missing time, and incredibly, at the very end of the video, one of the 3 women, one of the 4 women who were there, utters something in what sounds like an unknown language. It's hard to hear, and we're still trying to pull out all of the extraneous noises without losing... with words that are not understandable. It's very hard because if you like remove the static and so forth, you remove pieces of the words also, and that makes them even more difficult to understand.
Right.
But right now, it does not appear to be spoken in a known language, and you'll hear that when we play the audio from this.
And let me add for my listeners that a still photograph, which does not do justice, obviously, to a moving video shot of an object in the sky. The videotape Whitley is talking about, we've got a still photograph on the website. Go take a look at www.artbell.com. You'll see that cloud, and you'll see the object there. Can you describe to them what's for those who don't have the internet, Whitley?
Yes. The cloud is very unusual. It is it has a number of different lights, like almost different colors of the rainbow, but they are integral to the cloud, almost as if it had some chemical composition or something shining from inside it that was causing the light to refract in various ways. It's a very unusual cloud. I've never seen one like it. I've not yet shown it to a meteorologist, but I'm quite sure that it's going to be an anomalous cloud.
The cloud formation aside, though, there is an object, isn't there?
That's right. An object. Actually, there are more objects than you can see in the snap on the website, in the snappy picture on the website. Some objects move into the cloud from below, and then out of the cloud from above. And in the snappy, we've got one of those objects that moves out of the cloud from above is captured in the snappy, moving very rapidly, little triangular shaped object.
So you've got that videotape.
Yes, absolutely. I've got it right here.
All right. Would you like to bring Darren on now?
Yeah, let's bring Darren on now.
All right, this is from, I presume, well, let's not presume, let's ask. Darren, where are you located?
I'm in Denver right now, Art.
You're in Denver, but originally Glen Rock?
Yeah, I get up there every Christmas, and, well, actually, whenever I can.
Where is Glen Rock?
It's near central Wyoming. It's about 20 miles out of Casper, if you're familiar with that.
All right. Whitley, go ahead. Whitley? Hello, Whitley. Where'd you go? Well, I don't know where Whitley went.
I'm right here.
Oh, you're right there. Okay, you disappeared on us for a second.
I've got another phone waiting in case the doctor calls. And I got
I see. All right. All right. At any rate, we've got Darren, and I asked him where Glen Rock was, and he told us. Now, go ahead and ask Darren anything you want.
Okay, Darren, why don't you tell us a bit about what happened to you growing up in Glen Rock?
My own personal earliest strange experience with any of this, it does extend back further into the family. My grandmother and my mother had both seen UFOs around that area.
Right.
But we were coming back in 72 from Montana.
Right.
And in between Sheridan and Casper, we ran into a thunderstorm and had to slow down to probably about 30 miles an hour along the road. tremendous thunderstorm.
Right.
And I was playing at the window in the passenger side.
You were how old at this point?
I was about 5.
Right.
And I don't recall who started the game, but I started receiving these knocks on the window.
Coming from the outside?
Yeah. And it's specifically on the window. It didn't come from the door. It didn't come from, the front window or anything.
Did anyone else in the car notice it?
Not on the roof. Not at the moment. Mom and me were the only ones in the car, and she was concentrating pretty hard on driving.
Right.
So you were moving?
Oh, yeah. We were going 30 miles an hour. You know, it was a deluge, literally.
I've been in them, I know. And you're telling me that somebody was knocking on your window doing 30 miles an hour?
That's what I've had to contend with for a while. I've thought about it, and I just don't think it was possible. But I'm knocking back and forth on this window with this, it would mimic my every knock. And I finally decided, well, this is something really neat, and I've got to show Mom this. So I got her attention, and I said, watch. And I knocked on the window a couple times, and it at this point did not mimic what I did. It knocked back in three sets of three, exactly the way Whitley had described it, knocking on his house,
right,
in 85.
And this must have been back in the 70s.
Yeah.
How did your mother react at that point?
Well, she screamed and floored the gas, you know, floored the accelerator, and then we took off.
Yup, that'd be my reaction, too.
You know,
mine, too.
Which scared me. I was having fun up to that point, and I jumped down into the floorboard and started to cry. And, you know, we really raced out of there. And, you know, thinking back, well, you know, certainly it couldn't have been a hitchhiker on the road running, you know, because this went on for probably a good 7 to 8 minutes before I decided to get my mom's attention. So, you know, a 7 minute run in a deluge at 30 miles an hour, I don't think is a possibility for a human.
Well, to a 5-year-old, knocks on the window are lots of fun, even at 30 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
To an adult, it's absolutely terrifying.
Could you all see out the window at all?
With the flashes of lightning, yeah. And that was the thing that really, you know, got my attention at that point, being that young, was I didn't see anybody out there. So I thought it was some sort of, you know, magic, I guess.
You know, when this happened to me in upstate New York, it was so powerful, and I sat in the chair thinking, should I go out? Can I go out? And to be very honest, as I reported in Transformation, I was just too scared.
I wouldn't have gone out there.
And I can't even now remember, I've ever had any hypnosis about this, whether or not I did go out. I really just don't know. Sometimes I've had a couple of dreams about it that suggest I may have, but I was not conscious of it. In my conscious mind, I was sitting right there in that chair. I was too scared to move. Because this is, it's an overwhelming thing, and it makes it, the fact that there's this cover-up going and it's so secret and so hidden makes it just extremely difficult to handle when you're alone with it. I can certainly understand their panic and their fear in that car.
I can, too. And I would have done as your mother did, Darren. I'd have put the, you know, I'd have floored it. And I'd be out of there, rainstorm or not. And I take it that when she did that, that it stopped.
Yeah, it did. But it kind of continued on later that night.
Later that night?
It was strange. We had gotten home, beaten the storm home, literally, and got into bed, and we had this a little terrier who, once we got tucked in and ready to go to sleep, suddenly that dog started to just, it crawled under the front of the bed and just let out a steady low growl until I went to sleep. I don't recall Mom saying that, you know, I think she went to sleep too. I don't know how, with the dog doing that. I mean, for some reason it didn't bother me, except for at first, and then I just got used to it, but the dog just would not stop growling all night long, according to her.
Now, when you were home, this was in Glen Rock?
Yeah, we'd reached Glen Rock, and we heard different sounds in the house that night.
Like thumpings or voices?
Well, actually, it was the old, I don't know if any of you guys ever had the hippie beads that used to hang in the doorways.
Oh, sure, sure.
those swayed back and forth all night long. And, you know, all the windows were shut. We had a central furnace at that time that, you know, did not give off waves of air. You know, and so thinking back, there was just no draft in the house to make those beads move. Which,
like it's,
you know,
haunted almost.
Yeah, it. Well, actually, you know, that's a whole different story, but that house was haunted. At least
the whole town is haunted. I was in the. We stayed at that hotel, Higgins Hotel, there when we were. I'm doing.
What brought you to Whitley? Why did you go to Glen Rock?
I went to Glen Rock because I'm doing an article for Life Magazine about the Close Encounter, the people of Close Encounter. Not this is not an article so much about UFOs. This is about the human element in this. And I went with the photographer Timothy Greenfield Saunders. To Glen Rock and then Ventura, and we're going to a few other places in this country as well where there have been exceptionally large numbers of sightings and experiences. And I'm just mentioning this in passing, that we stayed in this hotel called the Higgins Hotel in Glen Rock, a lovely little place. Only I noticed that the third floor was locked up. I think, Darren, do you know about this?
About you probably know more about it than I do.
Well, I did.
I know it's haunted.
Well, I questioned the owners of it, and they said, oh, yeah, we keep it locked up because it's haunted and it scares people up there. And now, this is perfect. I mean, only in Glen Rock would the hotel be so haunted. They just have to close off an entire floor.
Yeah, that's really odd.
Very odd.
You lived, Darren, all your young life in Glen Rock?
Oh, yeah, up till, like I was 24. I just turned 31 last Saturday.
And this was fairly, these kinds of things were fairly commonplace in Glen Rock?
Yeah, you know, growing up with it, it doesn't seem that unusual, but you get out of Glen Rock and try to tell people about these things, and it's like you just walked off the surface of Mars.
Because it's an everybody in Glen Rock sort of thing. For example, Darren and his family and friends were kind enough to gather for us when we were there, and among the people was a wonderful elderly couple who had the experience back in 1975 of driving down the highway at night with this huge lighted object above them, shining a searchlight down, which they were swerving to avoid, and then finding that a sheriff's car from the sheriff's department drove past them, chasing the object, and they watched it chasing the object off down the highway.
Oh, my.
And, again, that was reported in the local newspaper. I've got the story right here.
All right. Darren, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. We're about to go to another couple of Glen Rock residents after the bottom of the hour, but I thank you, Darren.
Sure. You betcha.
Take care, my friend. That's Darren Young, who grew up in Glen Rock. When we come back, two more Glen Rock people. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. Dial area code 702-727-8499. That's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, good morning. It's great to be here. Whitley Strieber is my guest, author of Communion and so much more. He is an abductee. And if you'll listen carefully tonight, before it's all over, even those who are somewhat skeptical, I think that will be erased as we bring on two more people from Glen Rock, and then we're going to turn our attention to a doctor who has removed implants, Dr. Roger Lear. All of that coming up in a moment. Company.
The bad news is all the posters, all the limited edition box sets of CDs and cassettes signed by Cusco are gone. All gone. But there is some good news. If you didn't order before, you've got one more chance. The folks at Higher Octave have a new pre-Christmas sale offer that you absolutely can't pass up. You can get any of the 10 Cusco CDs or cassettes for just $12.98 from now through November 29th. And that, of course, includes the new Apuramac 3. Just call 1-800-562-8283. And if you order two or more Cusco CDs or cassettes, you can get the Best of Cusco for only $5 more. Did you hear that?
I said the best of Cusco for just $5 more. But remember, you've only got from now until November 29th when Higher Octave goes off the air and a new sponsor takes their place here on the show. Once again, here is the offer. Get any Cusco CD or cassette for just $12.98 plus shipping and handling. Buy two and get the best of Cusco for only $5 more. Don't miss out on this tremendous offer. That's three Cusco CDs at less than $12 each, including shipping and handling. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-562-8283. That's 1-800-562-8283. Well, all right. What the hell is going on in Glen Rock, Wyoming? We're probably driving the real estate prices right down through the ground in Glen Rock right now.
Hard to know what's going on in that respect.
All right. Whitley Strieber is our guest. There he is. There is his voice. He's in San Antonio, Texas. And now we're going to bring on two people. We're going to bring on Marla Hendricks and Jamie Eager. I believe that's correct. Is that correct, Whitley?
Yes.
And they're located both in, where? Are they in Glen Rock?
They're in Glen Rock, yeah.
Glen Rock, all right. Here they are. Let's see if we've got them. Marla, are you there?
Hello, yes.
Hi, and Jamie?
I'm here.
All right, Whitley, it's all yours.
Okay, let's start with talking with you, Jamie.
Okay.
Since we've been talking so much about the nine knocks, and you are one of the actual direct witnesses, I believe. You heard them yourself.
Yes, I did.
Why don't you describe that experience for us?
Well, the experience started quite a few years before that. We lived on a ranch about 60 miles north, and it was the same place that you talked about, the elderly couple seeing the UFO. And we seemed
yes.
to see a lot of lights in the sky quite often. And so then when I moved to town and this happened, I thought it was totally happening to me. I didn't have any idea that it was the whole town until I opened the paper up the next Thursday. We get the paper once a week.
Yes.
And I was just shocked to see that it happened to, you know, several people in town.
And what did happen that night?
I was sleeping. It was about 2:45 in the morning, and I heard three very loud, dull knocks at the door. I have a big wooden front door, and it was a big knock, knock, knock. Very slow, very loud. And I sat up in bed, and I looked around, and everything seemed to be kind of an orange color, kind of an amber color,
mm-hmm.
like lights or something from outside. And I got up, and I was heading down the stairs. And as I was halfway down the stairs, I heard another set of three knocks, the same exact thing, really loud and dull thuds. And I looked at my legs, just seemed to be luminescent in that color. And I pinched myself. You know how you pinch yourself to see if you're awake? I
right.
did that. And I kept saying, I'm awake, I'm awake, I'm awake. I am really awake. And I went down to the foot of the stairs, and I looked at the door, and I just... I had no feeling whatsoever to go out the door. I kept thinking, they're out there. You know, it's there, they're there. Something is going on out there, but I really didn't have the inkling at all to go out through the door.
I know the
feeling. It was so strange. And I have a big collie dog who stood in front of the door between me and the door. And her hair was standing on end, and her eyes were big, and she didn't move a muscle. Didn't bark, she didn't growl, she did not move a muscle.
Uh-huh.
I turned around, and I went back upstairs. I went into my son's bedroom, and I looked at my son, and I went to bed. I had a good feeling. It was just, you know, a warm feeling. I just felt very, very relaxed and very calm. I went to bed, and as I laid in bed, I heard another set of the three knocks, knock, knock, knock on the door. And I laid in bed with this smile on my face, and I said, imagine that. They're out there knocking on my door, and I'm in bed, going to bed with a smile on my face. It was the dangest feeling. And the next thing I knew... the telephone rang. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was our next-door neighbor saying, did you hear the burglars? And when she said that, I thought, aha, she heard them too. I wasn't asleep. I was awake, and I thought, I had a happening. Wow, I really had a happening. And so I got up, you know, and a lot of times when you think you see something or you think you've dreamt something, this was actually real. I heard it. I wasn't asleep. I felt myself, you know, and she heard it too. So I got up, and I was sitting down, and I was having coffee. And a friend of mine, well, actually, it happens to be the woman who with her husband was chased by the UFO, came in. They were friends of ours, and they came to town, and she was having coffee with me. And I said, you won't believe what happened. I said, this happened. I said, it actually happened. I had this happening. And And so then it was later, we weren't even talking about that anymore. And my son came down the stairs, and my son was about 10 years old at the time. And this was 9 years ago, and people didn't talk about, you know, you didn't have UFO t-shirts, and you didn't have shows on TV. Nobody talked about anything like this at all. It just wasn't spoken or anything. And he came down the stairs, and he looked at me, and he was just very, very angry with me. And he said, "I don't know why you like them." And I said, "Like who?" And he said, "Those people." He said, "I don't know why you like them. They steal you away from your beds at night. They take you away from your parents, and they stick things up your nose, and they're not nice." And he just turned around and slammed out the door and was very angry with me. And that was a point in my investigation where I got really frightened and angry and confused and wasn't as much fun as it used to be.
It's not the only case where the children have been at ease with it, or the parents have been at ease with it, and the other is very much the opposite. We have more than one case like that, Jamie, so don't feel alone in this. I could easily connect you with another mother who's had a very similar experience with her little
very
girl.
Very disturbing.
Jamie, was this a norm in Glen Rock?
Well, not at the time. I didn't know. Well, at that time, I had just moved to Glen Rock. We had lived out at the ranch. My husband was a rural school teacher, and we lived out at the ranch, and we just moved to town. And so
but
I
you had a
no
lot happen at that ranch, as I recall,
yeah,
too.
We did. The people that owned the ranch, they had a lot of sheep missing, so many sheep that they didn't even find any carcasses or anything, so it wouldn't be predators. They thought that someone was shipping them up in trucks and hauling them out. And so they sat on the hillsides many, many nights, you know, with guns, trying to find rustlers. And they watched many of these lights. And, in fact, one night they had checked the sheep in a barn and turned around, and there was the mother and the daughter, and there was a spacecraft so big, she said it must have been standing about 75 yards behind them, and it was so big that it filled the whole sky up behind them.
Oh my.
And when they turned and looked, it was just zip gone. They said it was lights and everything, and it was just gone.
Wow.
And so I don't know what was rustling the sheep, but so then we moved to town, and like I said, I thought that this was my happening and that this had happened to us. And then when I read in the paper, you know, it happened to almost everyone in the whole town. And a lot of people noticed the fog. They said that there was an orange-colored fog all over town.
Yes.
And a couple of the bartenders said that when they were going home, they saw this strange fog, and it just gave them a real eerie feeling.
An orange-colored?
Kind of an amber-orange-colored fog, a strange-colored fog.
That's quite remarkable.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, it's actually, it is remarkable, but it is also something that in experiences like this, there's often a fog or that kind of will settle over an area or over a specific individual. For example, I was just after we went to Glen Rock, the next stop was Ventura, California, and I listened to a close encounter witness describing how she had been driving in Ventura and in a car with her two children, her two sons, and had been overtaken by this strange glowing fog that kind of came up from behind them and actually surrounded the car, whereupon they had an hour of missing time.
Let me interject here. If you read the chronicles of what has occurred in the Bermuda Triangle in nearly every instance of compasses beginning to swirl, time disappearing, people appearing to go into other dimensions, that sort of thing, always, those stories are connected with a strange kind of fog that descends first.
Hmm.
That's right. That's very true.
Yeah, no, that is very true. We also have Marla Hendricks on the line, and I guess she's in Glen Rock as well. Is that correct, Marla?
Yes, I am.
So, what happened to you?
Well, this happened back in October of 1995.
Do you know, by the way, Marla, do you know Jamie? Are you friends?
Yes.
You know each other?
She was with me that day.
All right.
Her and her mother and myself and my mother.
All right, so we've got a lot of eyewitness testimony.
Right.
All right, so tell us what happened.
Four of us. Well, we had been up in Cody, Wyoming, to our daughter's volleyball tournament. And we were getting ready to leave town, and this was in the middle of the afternoon, a little after 2 o'clock, and I called home to let my husband know that we were leaving, and we stopped at the gas station and gassed up and bought some pop and headed down the highway. And I mean, it was just a beautiful day, you know, blue sky, sunshine. And we were probably about 20 miles out of Cody. And Jamie leaned over and looked up in the sky, and she said, "Oh, look at that beautiful rainbow cloud." And I was like, "Rainbow cloud?" You know, Mom and I kind of looked at each other, and because we've always hunted and fished and, you know, watched the sky a lot with all the clouds, and hadn't seen a rainbow cloud. So I couldn't see it driving, so I pulled over to the side of the road, and it was just beautiful. And so I knew that I had two pictures left on my camera. And so I said, "You know, do you think a picture turns out if I, you know, took it?" And so I opened my door and started to get out and walk to the back of the van. And Jamie said, "You know, I've always thought that a rainbow cloud meant that a UFO was hiding behind it." And I kind of just snickered, you know, thinking, "Yeah, right, Jamie." And I lifted my back window up of the van to shade my camera lens from the sun. And she said, wait, just a minute." She said, "It'll start to dissipate, and we'll get to see the UFO in the middle." And so I waited a minute, or it wasn't even a minute, I mean, it was seconds. And sure enough, this big fluffy cloud started dissipating, and right in the center of it appeared this disc-shaped UFO. And we were just all in amazement. And I took one picture, took my camera down, brought it back up. I had a 35 millimeter. Took another picture, and we were just all amazed, you know, that it did what she said that it would do.
Jamie, how did you know that was going to happen?
I had no idea.
Is this something that just came to you?
Well, I have seen a couple of rainbow clouds before. And then, like I said, I have kind of seen the lights and stuff, and I always was a little personal, you know, ha-ha with myself that well, I think it's because there's a UFO behind there, and the energy is given off making the cloud look like that, you know.
But,
and,
you know, Jamie, at the end of the tape, there are those words in another, which we can't, we've got every word on the tape pretty much, and they're pretty innocuous on the video that you made, that was made while you all were in Missing Time.
Mm-hmm.
Except the last few words, we can't seem to capture what language they would be in, and those words appear to be being spoken by you. And the reason I bring this up is that there is a lot of evidence in the close encounter experience that people know more about this on some level than we're really admitting to ourselves, or that we can admit to ourselves. Many cases where individuals will be seen engaged in activities in close encounter experiences that suggest they're very familiar with what's happening, but they have absolutely no memory of it afterwards. Conceivably, this is an example.
Whitley, I'd like to ask them both about the missing time. How do you two know that there was missing time?
Well, Marla can finish that story, and then I'll tell you about just what I just did this last week.
Sure, okay. Marla?
Okay. Well, to continue on with this story, so we were all just, you know, oh my gosh, we were all so excited about this beautiful rainbow cloud, and then it was just kind of, we were done with it, and my mom and I got back in the car, and I started down the highway, and then I got really sleepy. And so I pulled over, and my mom drove on to Thermopolis, which is about 85 miles between Cody and Thermopolis.
And that's about how fast she drives.
Yeah. Well, you know, just about 70 or so. And so when we got there, Jamie called her husband in Glen Rock and was surprised when they were talking to find out that it was 4:45. It had taken 2.5 hours to drive 84 miles. And between the four of us, I mean, we all, you know, maybe 10 minutes, we stopped and looked at this cloud, took the, you know, snapshot, and then the gas time, because we have the record of my phone bill calling my husband at 2:05, and then the record of her phone bill. And like I say, 84 miles, and it took 2.5 hours.
At 70 miles an hour with that one 10-minute stop.
Right.
Impossible. So there's roughly calculated how much missing time?
About an hour and 15 minutes.
An hour and 15 minutes.
But the interesting thing was...
not the kicker.
This is the kicker. Just the other day, last weekend, her daughter has graduated, but mine was in the state volleyball tournament again in Cody. And so we went up there, and after the game, the girls ended up losing the exact same game at the exact same time as they did 2 years before. After that game, I stopped and bought a medicine cabinet, which they had to take off the wall. They couldn't find the knob. We just wasted so much time. Then we had to go downtown and clean the paint off of a window that we painted all up for the girls. Then we went to the motel and got the girls all packed up. Then we went to TCBY and couldn't decide what we wanted to have for ice cream. We must have wasted 45 minutes in there. And then we got in the road. And I usually drive slower than Marla drives, and I was driving, and we got to Thermopolis, and we had wasted much, much more time in Cody than we had the 2 years before. And when I pulled into Thermopolis, it was 3:15.
Here we go again.
So I know for a fact that, you know, we should have gotten there at least before 3, you know, at least by 3 or 3:15 at the latest the last time, and it wasn't until 4:45 we got there 2 years before. So that really gave me a confirmation that there really was something missing. You know, the first time around, it's the strangest thing. You don't think of it. For some reason, you get the feeling it's not important. When I called my husband from Thermopolis because, you know, to tell him that we were on our way home, and he said it was almost 5 o'clock, I went to the table that the ladies were sitting in there eat. They were going to, you know, order to eat. And I said, ladies, it's almost 5 o'clock. Do we have some missing time here? And nobody paid any attention to me. They said, well, what should we have for dinner? Da 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 da. I mean, it was like, okay, nobody's interested. I'll just drop it. But that's the way it seems always at first. It seems not important, then you drop it. And then later, even years later, something comes to you and you think, that's really important.
Now, do either one of you know what you did during this missing time?
No.
Sounded silly on the tape.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I started to say. That's what the kicker is. A month after that, I always video my children's athletic activities whilst basketball was coming up. And I hadn't watched the volleyball tape from state. And so I thought, well, gosh, I better, you know, get to the end of that volleyball so that I can start the basketball. And I hooked it up to my big screen TV and started playing it. And this rainbow cloud appears on my videotape.
Oh, my. So, in other words, you videotaped during the missing time.
Well,
we had no idea.
You know, there were four of us.
Nobody knew it.
And you would think, as excited as we were, my husband said this, you know, Marla, you were so excited about taking your film in the very next day when you got home to get these still pictures.
Right.
And if you had known you had a video, wouldn't have you been excited to see it? And this is a month later, and it just, you know, I just plugged it in so I can start recording again, and here this appears on my video.
And then as you're watching the rainbow cloud, all of a sudden at the top of the screen, zip comes out an actual solid ball of something, which is on what you have on the internet now.
Oh, my God.
Silver.
So,
and we didn't even know that she taped it.
So in other words, you all, four of you, is that correct?
Yep,
four of us, right.
Actually did taping. Whitley, how long is the videotape?
It's about 90 seconds.
About 90 seconds in total.
And you can hear each of us talking and saying, oh, gosh, right. it's just beautiful, you know, because of the colors and everything.
Right.
And not one of us remember videotaping.
All right, I want to finish this up. We're at the top of the hour, so everybody hold tight through the break, and we will be back. And we've got Marla Hendricks, Jamie Eager, both Glen Rock people. As the saga of Glen Rock continues, we'll finish up in a moment. My guest throughout the night tonight is Whitley Strieber, and you will hear his story and the story of implants. Roger Lear, Dr. Roger Lear, who's been a pioneer implant surgeon, is going to be our guest shortly. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Unbelievable, unbelievable.
talk with Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM from outside the U.S., first dial your access numbers to the USA, then dial 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is, and by the way, we're about to consummate a deal with Talk Radio in England, and portions of this program every night then will be on the air all over England and Wales and Northern Ireland, and that's coming up shortly as we sort of edge toward a more international kind of grasp. Isn't that intriguing? I'm looking forward to it. Good morning, everybody. My guest is Whitley Strieber, and we have been discussing the Glenrock people. Darren Young, first, Marla Hendricks, and Jamie Eager, both still with us, who have missing time. They saw a UFO. As a matter of fact, during the missing time, they videotaped a UFO. That's right, during missing time, they videotaped a UFO. We have a still photograph of that UFO and the unusual cloud formation they've been talking about, along with their reports of missing time. We're going to finish up with that in a moment. Then we're going to turn our attention toward implants. As you know, Whitley Strieber has one in his ear. Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans, or maybe more, may also have implants. Dr. Roger Lear is probably the pioneer implant surgeon in the U.S. We'll be talking to Dr. Lear shortly. And Marla Hendricks and Jamie Eager, welcome back, all. We didn't get finished properly, so let us do that now. Missing time, and here you videotape during the missing time. We've got a photograph, a still photograph, which does not do justice to a moving UFO, but it is on the website at www.artbell.com. Go take a look. Whitley, is there anything else we should be asking these young ladies?
Well, I think they've done a very good job of giving us a picture of what was going on there. There's so much more to the Glenrock story. We could go on all night. But I believe that perhaps the place to leave this is with the audio from this videotape, which I can play for you, and I'll play just the first part of it, and then pause it and speak about it for a moment, and then we'll go on to the end where Marla feels that it is her mother speaking in these last few moments, and I think Marla, if I'm not correct, you think that you have an idea of what she may be saying, although from what we're hearing down here on the tape we have on some pretty good equipment, it's not English. So we just have to wait and find out exactly what it is. But you did tell me, Marla, I believe, that you think she's saying something at that point in English.
Right, just playing it off from my video.
All right, go right ahead.
Let the listeners listen to that and see what they think.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, we're holding.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're just getting it started here.
Okay, this is a videotape that was taken during a missing time segment that wasn't even discovered until a month later.
Until a month later. Here it goes.
Okay.
I wish you would show us again. Perfect UFO. I want to see it again.
Okay, Art, I'm going to pause it now. And
okay, what I heard, it could have been a little louder, but I heard whose voice say it was a perfect UFO, I want to see it again?
That was Marla.
That was you, Marla?
That was my voice, yes.
Do you remember saying that, Marla?
You know, we were so excited, you know, to see that shape appear, and that's what I wish people could see, the 35-millimeter photo.
Yes.
Of it, because that's where you can see the shape, the actual shape.
Well, you get it to me, and if you can get it to me, Marla, we'll get it up on the website, and people will see it.
Do you have any memory of this conversation at all, either of you?
I remember talking about, I remember laughing because I couldn't believe, I just remember laughing that why did I say that, and it did that. But I don't ever remember her taking a video camera of it. I don't ever remember.
No video.
It.
No video. But he, and yet here it is.
Four of us, one of us would remember.
You bet.
Yep.
I didn't even get
Oh, and the other thing that I can add to that is that I had videotaped the girls' volleyball game, put it in the van, and we had gone to the motel, and four women, we took all of our luggage and coats and paraphernalia and put it all on top and left. So where do you suppose the video camera was?
It would have been under everything.
Under everything. Because it was used at the gym, and then we came to the motel and piled everything on.
So you would have actually...
So we weren't even near the video camera.
Unpacked the car in order to get to the video camera at that point.
That's, I mean, because we've just racked our brain trying to figure out how we got it on video.
Okay, full 1 hour and 10 minutes of flat missing time. All right, Whitley, play the very last part of this tape, and
yes.
Everybody's going to boost the volume up
yeah,
a little
I boosted
bit.
The volume a little bit.
Okay, everybody's going to have to listen very carefully now.
Okay, we'll get it right up to it. That's it.
No, that was not clear. That was not clear for some reason.
Okay, I don't know why it wasn't, because it's extremely clear here. It's bell clear.
Were you holding the phone actually to the right place in the speaker?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, for some reason, I heard it earlier today when you played it just fine. But for some reason, it didn't come out this time. I don't know why.
Let's try it. You want to try it one more time?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact.
Let me boost the volume a little bit more.
Right.
Because I'd really like people to hear this.
All right.
And it'll just be the tail end of it.
All right. Trying this one more time. I heard a voice that time, but it was not decipherable to me. Marla, you've heard this and you have the original tape.
Right.
Any idea what was at the very end of that? It wasn't very audible, obviously, here.
Right. And to me, from the tape that I have, it sounds like my mom saying, there, right there at the end of that.
The far end.
Yeah, the far end.
The far end.
The far end.
The far end.
Okay, what I heard earlier today, indeed, didn't sound like English to me.
Mm-hmm.
It just simply didn't sound like any English words that I recognized. Does your mother, Marla, speak any other language?
Well, no, not that I, you know, not that she ever has before. My family, before I was born, lived in Peru. So, you know, she spoke a little Peruvian with them. And,
That made that, so it Whitley, do you recognize that as
well? No, we don't. We're going to really listen to this carefully. To be quite frank, it's not coming out as English words right now. We'll have to see. It ends in a burst of static, and then, as you heard a moment ago, there's a lot of noise from a basketball game that she had filmed later. I'm sure you overheard that when I slipped. When I was turning the system off.
Yes.
But we will analyze that carefully. What I have to do is pull all of the static out of it without removing any parts of the voice, and I need to do that visually, and I have not been able to do that, and we can get it to the point where we have nothing left at all but
except
the sound
the
of the voice.
Voice,
and then we'll know what's being said.
Indeed, that can be done. All right, we'll look forward to that. I want to thank Marla, and I want to thank Jamie. Thank you both for helping us unwind the story of the strange occurrences in Glen Rock.
Thank sure, you. We enjoyed being on air with you.
Okay, good night to you both. And Whitley, you know, I think at this point, Whitley, a lot of people, of course, have never really heard your story, and maybe we ought to take this opportunity, if we can.
Sure.
To go back to the communion days, the beginning of all this, and just give people some idea of what happened to you and why you're where you are today with all of this.
Yes. on the night of December 26, 27, 1986, I was awakened in the middle of the night by what appeared to be a nightmare that would not go away. I woke up finding myself in a small, confined space with what appeared to be two different types of being. One were small, short, blue, very stocky figures, and the other one was a tall, willowy sort of figure with a very long face and big, black, slanted eyes. And I went through a considerable amount of terror. I mean, it was really remains the most terrifying thing that's ever happened to me, because my impression was that I was having the mother of all nightmares, and then I could not wake up from it. I'd opened my eyes and I was sitting up, and yet it was still unfolding exactly as if it was happening in real life, which was like being, I guess it would be like that to be trapped in a psychosis, only this was even more vividly real. I began screaming, and an electronic voice began repeating the phrase in this sort of soothing, feminine, but quite machine-like tone, "What can we do to help you stop screaming?" I was shown a needle, which was inserted into the side of my head and caused a blue flash behind my eyes.
That wouldn't help me to stop screaming.
No, it wasn't. Wasn't helpful in that direction. At some point, right after that, I blacked out. Shortly after that, a few other things were done, and I blacked out. And the next thing I remember is waking up in the morning with the feeling that I had been beaten up during the night. And I felt dreadful, absolutely dreadful. I had a thought that there had been an owl flying around in the house, and then that there had been owls at the window, all these ideas about owls. Later in the afternoon, the side of my head and other parts of my body also began to hurt, and my wife could see an injury on the side of my head, and I began to remember, first in flashes and then more clearly, the story that I have just told you, and I went to the doctor. Because I was, a couple of days later, because I was very, very disturbed about this at this point, because I had these extremely bizarre memories, no idea at all about UFOs. It was not something, and aliens, it was not something that was in my mind. I had been fascinated with them as a child, but not in my adult years. I told the story to my doctor, and he laughingly said, "Well, you're telling me you were taken aboard a flying saucer by little men." And I thought, oh, God, he's right. I am insane. And we had neurological tests, a full neurological workup, including an MRI scan. We did a series of tests for a disease called temporal lobe epilepsy that causes vivid hallucinations. I did a full set of psychological tests that revealed me to be under a very high level of stress, which is not too surprising.
But not schizophrenic?
No. No abnormalities were found.
All right.
No physical abnormalities, no mental abnormalities. And I was finally left in the position of not knowing what had happened. I, at that point, had begun reading a book called Science and the UFOs by Jenny Randles that had been given to me by my brother by coincidence, apparent coincidence, for Christmas. And I saw a description, and it was rather similar, it seemed, to what happened to me. So I telephoned Bud Hopkins, who was mentioned in the book, and got in touch with him and met him. And he proved to be very supportive, and he was kind enough to help me find a forensic hypnotist, because I must admit, at the time when I sat in Hopkins' house talking to him and listening to him to tell these stories, I thought it was just utter bunk. But my concern was that I had actually been physically attacked and raped, and my doctor agreed, without consultation with Hopkins, that this might be the case. So I ended up with Dr. Donald Klein, who was the chief of the, I believe, of the New York State Department of Psychiatry, and a skilled forensic hypnotist who had worked in many criminal cases over his career. And Hopkins expected it was aliens, but Klein and I privately expected that we would find that once I was under hypnosis, I would be able to see the people, see the faces of the people who had done this, and that the only alien imagery was something that my mind had thrown up as a kind of a screen to, so because I was having trouble facing the humiliation that was involved. Instead, the hypnosis, not only did it, was it incredibly vivid, that it was clearly alien contact, but I flashed back during the second hypnosis session to the year 1957, when a similar event had taken place. It was just the most shocking couple of weeks when I did these three hypnosis sessions of my life. Changed my life.
Of course.
And that is why I wrote Communion, and having no idea that all of this, what I believe is completely contrived denial, was out there. I mean, I just thought people would take my story at face value.
What specific descriptions did you unravel under hypnosis? In other words, what did these beings look like?
Well, the most vivid one is similar to the cover of Communion. It's the cover of Communion is a little bit more human-looking than what I saw, but it's close enough. Like, for example, it has lips on the cover of Communion. I do not recall seeing any lips. And it has a nose, and it was more, I'll tell you very frankly, what I saw were the two big black eyes and this long, narrow thing coming down between them. And if anything, there may have been something folded up behind it. I don't think it was a face, in other words, not like the face on the cover of the book. It was something much stranger. And it had, the body of this creature had a sense of motion about it that was very liquid and graceful. But what was so odd is that during hypnosis, I felt really very much like it was someone I knew. Like this was not someone unfamiliar to me. And then there was this flashback to where I'm with my father and my sister, and I feel no fear. We're in a big room, big vaulted chamber, and there are cots lying in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And there are fully dressed American soldiers lying on the cots, motionless. And this creature is moving among them with a willowy sort of movement, with a little stick that she's touching one or another of their foreheads. And I ask her who they are. And she says, they're all soldiers, in a sing-song voice. And then I say to my father, who is very frightened, I say, it's okay. And he says, no, Whitty, it's not okay. And I remember under the hypnosis, this appalling fear went through my body like an electric bolt, like a bolt of lightning. And the doctor, who is really skilled at this kind of thing, knew that people who had like recurring instances of abuse would flash and had null and repressed memory would flash back between these various instances spontaneously without realizing they were doing it. So he suddenly had detected a change in my voice, and he said, how old are you? And my little 12-year-old South Texas voice pipes up and says, 12.
Wow.
And I heard myself say that, and I was amazed. I mean, you're not totally unconscious at all under hypnosis. You're very well aware of what's going on, at least I was.
Whitley,
so that's part of my story.
Okay, at what point did you discover or discern that there had been something planted in your ear?
Art, this is a tough one to talk about, but I will get into it. This occurred if the implant is real, and I frankly believe it probably is from what happened with it, but we don't have, it's not a smoking gun type of implant like Roger Lear will be talking about, because we don't have it. But if this is real, it came into my ear on the night of May the 24th, 1995, when the following incident occurred.
All right, we're not going to have time to unwind the incident right now. Let me advise you that I've got Dr. Lear on the line. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll unwind that story very quickly.
Very quickly.
Regarding yours, your implant, and then it's logically proper to go to Dr. Lear at that point.
Yes.
So hang tight. Dr. Lear and Whitley Strieber are my guests coming up. And we're going to be discussing implants. You don't believe, huh? Suggest you stick around and listen. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Her hair is hollow gold, lips sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She's got a music on you.
And she.
Talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies. Dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. Now, here again is Art Bell.
My guest is Whitley Strieber. And boy, have we got a deal for you tonight. Whitley has a tape. He's got a videotape. The tape is called Pure Balance. And I suppose this is something that I would consider a piece of dynamite. This tape teaches the meditation technique that Whitley used to improve or even bring on a close encounter. That's why I say it's a piece of dynamite, really. He says it can help you get into contact or get out of it. It can make the experiences you have work for you in some rather incredible ways. Whitley, very quickly, this is a kind of a piece of dynamite. I look at it that way because here's a tape that actually, if they wanted, and I think people should be damn careful what they wish for,
right,
could bring on contact.
Well, it has worked before for that, but I must say that it's really to get in control of it and to explore the situation. I made this tape over a year ago, and I did not release it because I wanted to be sure that if I spent some time with it, I felt like it was right. And this is close to what I did when I began to get my experience into focus as anything I can communicate. It also has on it some of the most unusual video that I've ever seen to sort of set the scene at the beginning of the tape. Some video from that's quite unlike anything else that's been seen. It's stuff that I've worked on myself that I have not yet released. And so this would be the first time you would...
This is all unreleased material, then.
It's unreleased in the United States, and some of it, and altogether unreleased other parts of it, yes.
All right. How much is this tape?
It is $19.95 plus $4.95 for shipping and handling. The total price is $24.90.
$24.90.
And they accept Visa and MasterCard.
And even better yet, I understand. Now, I want to be careful here. I want to advise you to be careful because we've done this before and people get absolutely swamped. You are willing to autograph these tapes?
Yes, I am going to autograph the boxes of the tapes that are ordered tonight. I'm not going to get into the position I've been in before where I have offered autographs not on your show, on other shows, and had 3,000 or 4,000 to do. But if I get that many to do tonight, I'll do them all. I promise that every box that is ordered tonight will be personally hand autographed.
How long a turnaround time?
I wouldn't think very long. 2 or 3 weeks, probably.
2 or 3 weeks at the most.
Yeah, I would think so.
All right. Do you have a number they can call? Is it a 24-hour number?
It's a 24-hour 800 number. I believe it's a robot at night, but you can leave your information. It's nice, beautifully set up.
All right.
It's 800.
Right.
350-4639.
4639.
Right. And if you are in contact, in a close encounter experience, this is important to have. If you want to get out of it, it will help. If the main thing is, it will help you get into control of it. If you want to experiment with getting into one, it's liable to help also.
That's why I said pure dynamite. And
pure
actually,
dynamite,
the name,
so.
Maybe that's what you should have called it. It's called Pure Balance. That's the name of the tape. And it's $24.90. Visa, MasterCard, whatever. The number is 1-800-350-4639. If it's busy, I don't know, can they take a lot of calls?
It should be able to take a lot of calls, but if it's busy, you know,
you can
try again.
All right, 1-800.
In a few minutes, it'll be free.
All right, 1-800-350-4639. First time Whitley has ever done this. So there you are, folks. Now, Whitley, if you would quickly, this thing in your ear, tell us.
Let me tell you the story. It's a very simple and a strange story. The night of May the 24th, 1995, asleep in a cabin in upstate New York, on the second floor, under the windows is a gravel driveway. I was awakened by the sound of crunching of gravel, in other words, tires moving in that driveway. Now, we were behind a locked gate. We were also about 5 or 6 miles from the nearest house, and so it woke me right up, that sound. The windows were open. It was a nice night. And I was frightened because there should not have been a vehicle out there, and it couldn't be anybody up to anything good. I rose up in the bed, and as I began moving, I distinctly heard a human voice in the backyard say, "Condition red," clearly.
Huh.
I then saw, standing in the doorway of the bedroom, which was at the foot of the bed, a woman and a man behind her. I could identify these people easily. I saw their faces clearly. There was a lot of LEDs from the alarm system, which was on and armed and not going off.
Right.
They moved toward me quite quickly, up toward the side of the bed, began to come out of the bed. I was aware of something behind them, but I don't know what it was. It was not another human being, but there was something in motion behind them as well.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I knew, I'm lying flat on the bed. My eyes are closed, but I'm totally conscious. I can hear someone talking to me, almost like you would talk to a frightened dog. A female voice saying, "Calm down, calm down," and then nothing until morning. I woke up, immediately told my wife the whole story, asked her if she remembered anything during the night. She did not. The alarm system was still turned on. I went to check the house out immediately. I went through the house, and as soon as I opened the door into the garage, I found that the garage door was wide open, despite the fact that the system was not indicating this. I walked out into the garage, and my hairs of my body stood on end as if I was in the field of static electricity. I started to get into the car, I did get into the car and had backed it all the way out when I realized that this static was inside the car as well. I jumped out of the car, went back into the house immediately. My wife came out, observed the condition of the car, and we stayed away from it because we did not know what this was. We closed the garage, disarmed the system, called the alarm man, the man who ran the system. He could not figure out how this had happened. Everything was in working order. The car gradually became normal again. That afternoon, my left ear began to hurt. I had a lump in the pinna, which is the outer part of my left ear, up toward the back and top. About 6 weeks, I deliberated getting this taken out right away.
Of course.
But there was another incident that occurred a few months later. A lady named Betty Dagenet had one autopsied after she died, and I read that she had been afraid that this would be that it would kill her to have it removed. So I didn't do anything about it, and I felt very helpless up there anyway. There was nothing but the local doctors. I didn't know Roger Lear at the time, so I didn't see what I could do about it.
So for years, you did nothing.
Well, the next thing that happened was we moved down to San Antonio, and at this point, this thing had turned on a few times. In other words, the ear would get red and hot, and there would be a warbling sound or a series of tones in my ear. It was quite remarkable. But what was so extraordinary, I became involved with scientists here who were very interested in the implants. I found a much more open-minded attitude in San Antonio, and they were, by this time, I was aware of what Roger was doing and his extraordinary, and by the way, he is the pioneer in this field, work. And I was actually talking to one of these scientists about this, about the way the ear worked when it did do this. It turned on, turned bright red before his eyes. And he said, let's not take it out. Let's try to study this thing if we can get it to turn on again.
Right.
We were never able to do that on any kind of a regular basis and under controlled conditions.
It didn't turn on demand.
No. Finally, I got... Frankly, I got very creepy about it, and I'm still him. And a few weeks ago, I attempted to have a surgery done here in San Antonio, and
you
I
went to a doctor, and he go ahead and tell him.
Well, he knew who I was, and he probably knew. He's a great doctor, great guy, a really, really good guy. He probably knew what he was taking out, but we didn't talk about it directly.
Okay.
It was just a foreign object. As far as the diagnosis went, that it became irritated when I lay on it at night and woke me up when I was sleeping. He examined this. He x-rayed it. It did not show up on x-ray, which is not unusual at all in this type of thing. But he palpated it and identified its position,
right.
Indicated, determined that it was fixed by examination, sat me in the surgical chair and made an incision and began dissecting around the object when the object moved down into another area of my ear, not far away, but far enough away to where it was out from under the incision.
This thing moved.
It moved, yeah, absolutely. And it had been fixed in position. And he managed, after some struggle, to get what he believed to be a small part of it, which upon examination in the not in a pathology lab, but in the laboratory that was specially working on this and is working on implants with me, they observed that it was made of what appeared to be distressed collagen, and it contained a number of discrete mineral crystals, probably calcium carbonate or potassium carbonate of some kind. There are two diseases that could create crystals in the skin. One is gout. These are not uric acid crystals. The other is a disease called pseudogout, which creates a substance called potassium pyrocarbonate. Mm-hmm. It's not potassium pyrocarbonate. And also, pseudogout occurs in joints. It's not observed in the pinna of the ear. So it's a very mysterious business, this object. We don't know.
And it's still there.
It's still there, and not only is it there, the doctor just examined it again the other evening, and he said it's bigger. It's back where it was in the first place. It's just as fixed, and it's somewhat larger.
So it moved back, and it's grown.
And
oh,
you can't
Lord.
Move it around at all. It is fixed there again, just as it was before the surgery.
All right, so now everybody's up to date on your implant. And,
yes.
All right, in a moment, we're going to bring on Dr. Roger Lear, who is probably the pioneer implant surgeon in this country. And we're going to talk to him about implants. But again, quite an offer from Whitley. I would say quite an offer. I call his tape pure dynamite. He calls it pure balance. It teaches you actually how to get into contact with, if you really want that, and I warn people, be careful what you wish for, these beings, or to get out of it. Apparently to go either way. $24.90. That includes shipping and handling. And he'll autograph it. Whitley Strieber will autograph it for you. You can order it now only through this program and only now at 1-800-350-4639. 1-800-350-4639. Autograph stuff is fun to have. At any rate, in a moment, Dr. Lear.
Okay.
All right. Once again, Whitley Strieber, and here comes Dr. Roger Lear. Doctor, are you there?
Yes, I am, Art.
Welcome to the program, Doctor. What kind of doctor? You're a surgeon, I take it.
Yes, I'm a podiatric surgeon. That means that my specialty is foot surgery.
Is what kind?
Foot surgery. Surgery of the foot.
Oh, the foot? Okay. Doctor, how did you get involved in the whole area of implants?
Well, my history probably goes way back to that famous day of July the 4th, 1947. I lived in Northern California, and I have just a very vivid recollection of my father coming into our kitchen and setting down the newspaper with the headline, and a very famous headline about the Roswell craft, U.S. Army Air Force captures flying disc. And he made a big to-do about it to my mother, and I, for whatever the reason, was just overwhelmed by this. But he went on with a long discussion of how he was telling everybody that we were not alone in the universe, and how anybody could think we were. It was impossible to believe, and so on.
Well, I agree with that today.
So he left an impression on me that lasted for many, many years. And then I've always been interested in astronomy, and I have a pilot's license. I do fly. I have a cousin who went into psychology and then became a professor at the University of Connecticut. And lo and behold, he went into a very unusual field, which is a near-death experience.
Right.
His name is Dr. Kenneth Ring.
Oh, yes. I know the name.
Yes, my first cousin.
Dr. Ring has been at our cabin in upstate New York, and one of his books, The Omega Project, was the first one that I believe that studied the close encounter witnesses in comparison to other people like near-death experiencers. He's also a remarkable scientist in this field.
There are a lot of people, of course, who believe the NDEs or near-death experiences, and a lot of ufology is mixed together, and I think I may be one of those people. I haven't made up my mind about that yet. But, Doctor, somebody at some point, I mean, here you are in a regular practice, even though you had that earlier experience, must have approached you about an implant.
Well, it turned out that I was covering a UFO conference in the capacity of an investigative reporter for a MUFON periodical called The Vortex.
Uh-huh.
And at that conference, I met a very world-famous 27-year researcher in the abduction phenomenon by the name of Daryl Sims.
Oh, yes.
And,
I guess you all know who Daryl is. He's probably been on your program before.
Yes.
So Daryl showed me some x-rays, which happened to be his feet. And that was kind of interesting because that happened to be my specialty. And in these x-rays were two demonstrable, what appeared to be metallic foreign bodies. He asked me my opinion, and I looked at them and said, well, when did the patient have her foot surgery? Because to me, they were not very remarkable. They appeared possibly as common, ordinary surgical fixation devices that we use in the foot. So his reply was, well, the patient has never had a surgery. And
okay.
I had my doubts whether that was true, and he said to me, if you'd like to review the patient's medical records, here I have them. With that, he reached into this giant suitcase that he carries around with him and hands me a large package of medical material, and he said, take this to your room and look at it. So I did, and fairly well convinced me that there was at least nothing there to show that this patient never had a surgery. So the next day I gave him back the records, and I just sort of a casual remark. I said, well, why don't you have them taken out and see what they are, and that'll just simply clear up the mystery.
Sure.
So he looked at me, and he said, the patient would be more than willing to do that, but she doesn't have any medical insurance, and she can't afford the surgery. So I thought for a minute, and I said, well, I'll tell you what, would you be willing to come to California? He had explained that she was in Texas. And he said, yes, I think she would. And I said, well, if she would come to California, I'll be happy to do the surgery without charge. And he looked at me and he says, do you really mean that? And I said, well, yes, I do. So he invited me to attend one of his lectures, and I did. And at that point, he had asked for a volunteer to pick up the tab for airfare. By the time the lecture was finished, there was a volunteer. The airfare was going to be taken care of. And we talked on the phone over the next few weeks, and he asked me if I could do another case, which was...
Well, let me stop you, Dr. Ernesto.
Sure.
Was there a history involved with this Texas patient that would indicate possibly an abduction or something that had occurred that related to what might have been in this patient's foot that made it interesting beyond the fact that the patient might have stepped on something or something at some point?
Yes, very definitely. Daryl had investigated over 250 cases, and this was one of the more interesting ones with a possible implant in the body. Uh-huh. She had several abduction experiences, which were she related, and I have written these up. Of course, they will be in my book should it ever get finished. I have one more chapter to go. You know how that feels, Art.
I do indeed. It's like giving birth, actually.
Yeah, it sure is.
All right, Doctor, this is a great cliffhanger. Whitley and Dr. Lear, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to break here. And when we come back, we'll find out exactly what, I guess we'll find out, what was in that foot. And we'll find out more about implants. Strange things. Do you believe? Are you a skeptic? Keep listening. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Young or old, married or single, everyone needs a will. If you don't have a current will, peace of mind is just a phone call away. With a lawyer-approved national will kit, you can write your own will for less than...
With Art Bell from west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, dial 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. Good morning. Whitley Strieber and Dr. Roger Lear, a surgeon who's dealt with implants, back in a moment. When it comes to information on ETs, if you're like me, you want to get as much as you can get your hands on. And I'm telling you, you've got to see Area 51, the alien interview. You may recall Extra Strange Universe showed a few moments of it. Whitley Strieber, as a matter of fact, saw it and declared it to be absolutely disturbing. Smuggled out, spirited out of Area 51 by Victor, who remains to this day in hiding. I'd love to interview him again. You can get your hands on this 65-minute documentary now and examine it for yourself. It is $19.95 plus shipping and handling. Allow 2 weeks for delivery. If you want to know the truth, I guess this is one path. Anyway, here it is. You've been waiting for it. To get it, call 1-800-510-3420 right now. That's 1-800-510-3420. Now, just call 1-800-354-6846 and never again be intimidated by a computer. Oh, and they are intimidating. And it, just once more, very quickly, Whitley has been with me and on my show for years now, Whitley Strieber, and he has never before on my program ever offered anything for sale. Nobody has ever seen this. This is material nobody else has. I call it pure dynamite. He calls it pure balance. It is a videotape that will actually, now again I tell you, be careful what you wish for, teach you how to have a close encounter. or if you're having one you don't want to have, teach you how to stop it. Video never seen by the public, and I don't even know that it'll be offered anywhere else. He's personally autographing each one of these. They're $24.90. You can order 24 hours a day. If it's busy, call back tomorrow. The offer is only going to be made on this show, and we hereby make it, so take advantage or not, that's up to you. The number is 1-800-350-4639. It's really funny. Over the years, a lot of people have said, I want to have a close encounter. I want to have a close encounter. And I always tell people why. here's the way to it, I guess, if you wish. 1-800-350-4639. You can call right now. Back now to Whitley Strieber and Dr. Lear. Gentlemen, you're both back on the air, and here we have this person from Texas with something in their foot. You were going to do the surgery pro bono. Somebody else sprung for the tickets to get the person there. The person came, doctor, and what happened?
Well, within the next 2 weeks following this agreement, Daryl had called me and asked me if I could do an additional case. And this he described to me on the phone as someone with an apparent metallic foreign body in the hand. Well, since the hands are not my specialty, I told him that I could possibly set up a surgical team and enlist the services of a general surgeon friend of mine.
Sure.
So, to make a long story short, on August the 16th of 1995, we did these first two cases. One female with two foreign bodies in the great toe of the left foot. One male patient with a metallic foreign body in the back of the left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from that point on was, to me, nothing but a surprise because, grounded with a scientific background, I began as a consummate skeptic. I've taken, in 33 years, numerous things, certainly out of the foot. As you know, people step on
sure.
all sorts of things. I've taken out hair, plastic, metallic bodies, glass, coral, all sorts of things.
I can imagine.
It's the foot is a real sort of a garbage can for puncture wounds and
yes.
foreign bodies.
Yes.
So from the get-go, as I said, these surgeries were a little different. Now, on the first case, which was the foot case, Daryl's a certified hypnoanesthesiologist, so he put the person out with hypnoanesthesia, and then I came in with two local anesthetics and anesthetized the toe area. In other words, this lady was sunked.
Yes.
She was fairly well out. We began the surgery and using x-rays as a marker, I tried to locate this foreign body. Well, when you do this, even after years of experience, literally what you're looking for is like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Mm.
If you have modern, super expensive equipment such as fluoroscans and lexoscopes, you can visualize this on a television screen, and the job's a lot easier. But we didn't have the funds for all this stuff.
In other words, you weren't seeing it three-dimensionally?
No.
Okay.
We were using an x-ray as a guide that I took just right before the surgery began, because you want to make sure that they don't move. Lots of foreign objects will move. So we got to the point where we felt we were near, and I touched it with an instrument. And at that point, I got my first surprise, because the patient violently objected, came out of the hypnoanesthesia, and just kicked her foot off the table. We had to restabilize the patient again. Daryl put her back down, and I instilled more anesthetic. Now, believe me, I've never seen anything quite that violent. Sometimes if you're using a local alone and you tug on a nerve trunk, you know, that'll
sure.
patient will say, ouch, or something. And
believe that, yes.
You know, put in a little more anesthetic and go about the job. But this was a violent objection. And she objected this way also when finally the object was visualized, clamped, and removed from the incision. Now, what this first one looked like, Art, was a triangle or a T, depending on the eye of the beholder. And it was about a half a centimeter in each direction. There's 2.54 centimeters in an inch, so you can get some size. And it was covered with a very dark, gray, glistening membrane, a well-organized piece of tissue. Now, this is not the kind of thing, and people are going to say, well, my gosh, you know, something that's in the body is going to get covered with a fibrous layer of stuff, you know. This wasn't that. This was a well-organized tissue membrane. So we were pretty anxious at this point to see what was inside.
Of course.
So we used a sharp surgical blade, and second surprise, we couldn't cut through the membrane.
Wow.
Now, these surgical blades are pretty sharp, Art, and you can whittle a bone with one, either on purpose or sometimes inadvertently.
Sure.
But when you can't cut through something which is definitively soft tissue, that's a bit of a shock. So, for the sake of good medical and surgical practice, we set the object aside and closed the wound, and then went on to the other side of the toe to go after the other object.
Yes.
When we got to that one, which was smaller than the T-shaped object, we touched it. We had the same violent objection again, instilled more anesthetic, removed it, and found that it was a small cantaloupe seed-shaped object, also covered with this same strange, gray, glistening, dark membrane. And again, we took a surgical scalpel, tried to open it because we wanted to see what was inside, and couldn't cut through it. Well, that was a pretty high strangeness.
High strangeness indeed.
So, again, for the sake of good medical practice, we forego that sort of business and closed up the wound, sent the patient to the recovery room under the care of the PhD psychologist to examine these people preoperatively and postoperatively. Now, you got to remember that I'd searched the literature a great deal before I ever took on anything like this to see if there was anything recorded that was peculiar.
Sure.
And we couldn't find much. So I was doing some, what I thought, you know, pioneering work, and I really didn't expect to find anything unusual. As I said, I was a skeptic. So this first case was an illustration of something that was down the road.
I've got to ask, what did you do with, obviously, you couldn't cut through this, so you must have pursued later in some way trying to get into this object.
Oh, absolutely. The tissue, we removed two sections of the soft tissue. I want to make this perfectly clear. We removed tissue that surrounded this object, which was eventually sent in for analysis. And then we placed the objects themselves in what I consider to be a safe transport media, because some of the things that I have read in the literature, and I'm sure Whitley will attest to this, some people have tried these things to remove things, and I read all kinds of things like they evaporated, they turned to powder.
Sure.
You know, somebody dropped them, the dog ate it, you know, but it never came
up. Yes, that happened. That was one case.
So I wanted to make sure I put these in something that would at least ensure that, you know, that they would be around. So what I did was I had my surgical nurse withdraw whole blood, and then we spun it down and mixed it with an anticoagulant and a preservative, and then we had some serum solution. And that's what we use to transport the objects.
Okay.
So before I tell you how we got into this, let me tell you about the hand case.
All right.
So we switched. We went ahead. The general surgeon went through the same thing. Did the hand again. He had a violent objection to the object being touched. We removed this thing, Art, and that was probably one of the most biggest surprises of all, because what we removed was another small little cantaloupe seed shaped object covered with a dark gray glistening membrane.
Oh my.
So you can say, well, one individual, let's take one individual with some peculiar type of physiology, some peculiar type of pathology. But now it's two different individuals.
Both with abduction backgrounds.
Both with abduction backgrounds and both with objects in them which are almost identical. In fact, they were so identical that when placed on a surgical sponge, you could literally not tell one from the other. Now, we put them in solution, and they go back to Texas with Daryl. He, in the presence of a chemist and another analyst, takes the objects out and subjects them to black ultraviolet light. And there's a reason for this. But he found that they, all three objects, fluoresced a brilliant green. Some of this brilliant green fluorescence has been found on certain areas of the bodies of abductees. So why were they on these objects? We do not know. And we believe that there's certainly more than a coincidence here, too many coincidences. So what else they found was if they were objects were dried, if they were left out, dried, out of solution, the membrane became brittle. Mm-hmm. And they were able to scrape the membrane off of the metallic object that was within. He sent that back to me, and I sent that out for analysis.
Doctor, how could something that, when wet, resist a surgical knife, and then dry, become so brittle you could just scrape it away? Are you aware of any sort of chemical substance that could exhibit that?
Well, I told you, you know, how long I've been working in this field.
And, exactly.
And the first time you come up with anything like this, the first thing you do is you begin to doubt your own veracity. You know, what did I miss? You know, maybe there's something new. Maybe the body's doing something that I don't know about. So I spent a long time sitting at the screen and getting on the net, going into Harvard Medical School Library and some of these others. And it was a good education because I realized that the cost of these things are not cheap. They charge you for every little library book you open in one of these medical libraries. But the upshot was that I found out that since I had gotten out of school, it didn't look like the body changed anyway at all. So, you know, and there wasn't anything in Robin's pathology, which is the Bible of pathology. There just wasn't anything that that had anything like this or could explain it. So you have to start asking questions of those people who are in biochemistry and people that are researchers in biopathology as to, you know, what kind of tissue. But when I get into in a moment, I'll tell you what this thing was made of, and maybe that will help to answer the question.
All right.
Daryl had told me that the soft tissue that surrounded the objects would come back with indicating no inflammatory response, and that there would be a lot of atypical nerve cells in the area. And all I could do was chuckle because... you know, how do you get something in the body and not have an inflammatory reaction?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. And atypical nerve cells, what do you mean?
Nerve cells that don't belong in that particular place. You know, we have, for example, nerve proprioceptors, which are at the ends of your fingers. They're for, like, fine touch.
Right.
Pressure for sensitivity of temperature. That's why if you put your finger on a hot stove, it's jerked away before you fry the finger.
Sure.
So that's what these things are for. So when we finally got the pathology report back on this tissue that surrounded these objects, they were loaded with nerve proprioceptors. So I said to myself, well, wait a minute, you know, I mean, Daryl's a nice guy, but he's not a psychic. You know, how could he ever know such a thing? And the other thing was that every piece of tissue that I sent out came back with no inflammatory response. You cannot put something or get something inside the human body without having the body react to it. It's a physical impossibility.
Except for these.
Except for this.
Now, you said these had particular atypical nerve cells around them. Would that account for the extra sensitivity when you tried to probe them, when you tried to touch them?
What else? What could it possibly be? I mean, it has to be. That's the only other, it's the only explanation. You're fooling around with in an area of a high density nerve cells. And see, most people believe that there's, you know, we have cells or sensory organs for pain. But we don't. Any sensory nerve under the right chemical and hormonal conditions can conduct pain. So if you want to, you know, get a train from point A to point B, and you own the car, you can rent anybody's tracks. And that's the way the body works, because we have two nervous systems, one the voluntary and the other the involuntary nervous system. And the involuntary nervous system uses the same tracks as the voluntary nervous system.
All right, Doctor, hold it right there. My guests, Whitley Strieber and Dr. Roger Lear, and we're talking about implants. We can barely put biological materials in our own bodies without having some sort of reaction. As witness the people who receive hearts and lungs and various body parts and have to take all kinds of drugs to prevent rejection. Fascinating. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Talking to first-time callers at area code 702-727-1222. That's area code 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Yes, that's actually Nye County, Nevada, the wild, the new Old West, as it says when you come into town. It's a pretty wild area, and we call it the Kingdom of Nye. Listen, what you're hearing right now, of course, is Cusco. It's from their latest Furamax 3. And the bad news is all posters and the limited edition box sets of CDs and cassettes signed by Cusco are gone, all gone, 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 gone. But the good news is, if you didn't order before, you do have one more chance. Higher Octave has got a pre-Christmas sale offer that you absolutely can't pass up. Here it is. You can get any of the 10 Cusco CDs or cassettes for just $12.98 from now through November 29th. And that includes the brand new Furamax 3. Just call 1-800-562-8283. And if you order two or more Cusco CDs or cassettes, you can get the best of Cusco for just $5 more. Did you hear that? I said the best of Cusco for $5 more. But remember, you only have from now through the 29th of November, when Higher Octave goes off the air and a new sponsor takes their place on the show. Once again, get any Cusco CD and cassette for just $12.98 plus shipping and handling. Buy two and get the best of Cusco for $5 more. Pick up the phone now and make your call. It's 1-800-562-8283. 1-800-562-8283. All right, interesting facts. Art, just a brief personal observation with respect to Whitley. Having read all of his nonfiction, seen him lecture both in person and video, listened to him a number of times on Coast, That which is so strikingly admirable is the incredible courage that he has displayed facing the unknown, both from the cosmos and within himself. Oh, I'll order this tape, but frankly, I don't know if I've got the guts to call for contact. Although there have been a number of times in my life that I've been in, quote, jackpots, unquote. I am too heavily invested in control. Yeah, this really is, I want to be careful here because the tape he's offering, you've got to order it by name, and it's called Pure Balance. And the public has never seen it before, ever. He's held on to it. And it's only being offered on this show, and it's only being offered now, and he's autographing each copy. And the incredible thing of, I call it pure dynamite. It's, don't call it that when you order. Pure dynamite, because it is a way for you to actually invite contact. All right? To me, that's pure dynamite. On the other hand, though, it's also a way to get out of contact if you're in it and don't want to be. So the name, the technical name of the tape is Pure Balance. Every one of them personally autographed by Whitley Strieber. All of $24.90. Call 1-800-350-4639. There's an automated thingy there now, Visa, MasterCard. If you don't want to deal with that, you can call during the day and get a human being. The number is, again, is 1-800-350-4639. You writing that down? I hope so. 1-800-350-4639. Now, we're going back to Whitley Strieber and Dr. Roger Lear. And Dr. Lear, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physician. I was a medic in the Air Force. But I know this. I know that our biological beings have a hard enough time accepting other biological pieces and parts, hearts, lungs, things that are transplanted that require tremendous drugs to prevent the body from rejecting them. And so, as you point out, these objects, whatever in the hell they were not inflaming the area at all, which seems utterly impossible and can only be accounted for, I would think, by this fibrous whatever it was that was around it, this mysterious fibrous stuff. Would that be your impression?
Well, Art, you say that you're not a physician, but you certainly are a skilled, astute observer, because that's most likely the cause. Now, when we were able to get this initial analysis done on the membrane, I was stunned again to find out what it was composed of. If this is it, if this is the thing that prevents the body from reacting to foreign objects. It's quite an interesting thing. It's only composed of three biological substances. One is called a protein coagulum, and if you would just picture, Art, a bowl of Jell-O, just plain, ordinary Jell-O, and then we'll add a few little things to it, like some dark brown granules, and these granules are what we call hemosiderin. Hemosiderin is a cousin to hemoglobin, which we find in the red cells. It's an iron compound, and it's oxygen binding. So we have our bowl of Jell-O now. We've added a few brown granules, and then we're going to add some striations to it, some material which is going to hold this thing together. It looks maybe like strands of coconut in our Jell-O. And you won't guess what this is, but it's keratin, which is the outermost substance of our skin. And that's it. That's in totality. That is this membrane. Now, where in the world, in what pathology textbook, has anyone ever described anything like this? And believe me, I've looked. If there's somebody out there that knows where in a pathology book this might be found, I would certainly wish that they would get in touch with me and those that have been working on this and steer us in that direction.
Doctor, I would think that surgeons, for example, who put in artificial heart valves and that sort of thing would be intensely interested in the sort of mixture you just described, wouldn't you?
Well, not only surgeons, Art, but we've had some very large drug companies that are interested in taking a good hard look at this. And, you know, if this membrane could be duplicated, just as you're saying, you could wrap anything in it and stick it inside the body, there would be no reason to have some individuals on immunosuppressive agents, Imuran and Cyclosporin and the numbers of others that are quite deleterious to the body. There is a price that you do pay for having an organ transplant.
Yes.
And if this can be eliminated, it would be a tremendous discovery for mankind.
Well, I would think also, I mean, people have artificial hips put in, artificial all sorts of things, foreign objects in their body that would be received much more lovingly biologically with this on them.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's just would be fantastic. Now let's take a look at, you know, where would the keratin come from? You know, and I've had numerous discussions with pathologists, you know, trying to give me a clue. Well, you know, when you open the skin, you drag some keratin, and well, it doesn't become combined in a membrane. You know, it's impossible. So there hasn't been a logical explanation, but one of the, and Whitley will, I'm sure, attest to this too, one of the most common marks found on an abduction victim is what we have termed a scoop mark.
A scoop mark, right.
Absolutely. That's correct.
And this scoop mark looks like you just took a little tiny spoon and you scooped something superficially out of the skin and it leaves a depression.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've seen these when they were relatively new. And when they're relatively new, they have a very shiny base that looks moist. But if you go to touch it with your finger, it's as dry as a bone. When they heal, they do not heal with a scab. Everything just kind of goes back to normal, and there you are with this little scoop mark in the skin. Well, jumping ahead a bit.
I think the light bulb just went on. let me guess. I'm just going to guess. Could it be that they are taking that little scoop to be part of the mixture that they put together to coat their implant with?
I think you're right on. And when
Absolutely.
I give you this other little part of the puzzle, you'll have...
Get ready for this. This is amazing.
You'll be amazed. To date, we've done 7 cases. And in 2 of the cases that we did, we chose individuals who had something on the skin, a scoop mark.
Mm-hmm.
And adjacent to this, or below it, was a little round grayish-white ball. Now, I sent the material out and had analysis done of the soft tissue, including the scoop mark, and it went to several different laboratories. All the tests are blinded. No one knows what they're getting or what it is. I just say tissue adjacent to foreign body.
Yes, sir.
And they send me a report based on that. Well, all of these pieces of material, in other words, 2 cases, you know, sent out 3 times, there's a lot of different specimens. Every single one came back with a diagnosis of solar elastosis. Now, that sounds like a pretty long technical medical term, but to boil it down, it's very simple. It just means that the dermis, or the deep layer of the skin, has been exposed to a huge amount of ultraviolet.
UV.
Now, can you take what you just said before and think this through? Suppose that there was available a small little instrument that would put out ultraviolet.
Mm-hmm.
And that little instrument could scoop keratin out of the skin and at the same time seal it with the ultraviolet.
As in cauterizing a wound or something like that?
As in cauterizing, but not to the point where you make a char. Because if you make a char like with a laser, if you have a carbonized edge, you're going to heal by the ordinary means. But if you seal it, you see. If you emulsify it, if you seal it with black ultraviolet light, then you're creating a phenomena which has never been used.
Now, yes. Now I flash back to Whitley's talking about this being with this wand. Yes, Whitley?
Yes, that's right. That wand is something that is I've not only experienced, but many people have written me about. I might add, by the way, that as soon as Roger told me about this solar elastosis finding, I was on the phone to the lab I've been working with here, and as I told him I would be, they are now searching for anything regarding the use of ultraviolet light or ultraviolet lasers in surgical applications, both in veterinary and in human medicine. No one could think of anything like this in human medicine, and there's just an off chance there might be something in veterinary medicine, but we don't think so. But I think what you're looking at here is the outcome of a completely unknown and unexplored surgical technique, and maybe even something that we weren't thinking about looking for until we saw this phenomenon, and now maybe they're going to start. We can start looking at ultraviolet light in a new way, just like the chemical companies are starting to look at this at these membranes. And you know, I have to tell you that I think that we're talking to an incredible man, Art. That he has done this, and Daryl Sims together have done this.
I'm not clear on who Daryl Sims, what his relationship is with Roger.
Okay, well, I'll let Roger talk about that also, but Sims is a fascinating individual. He is 27 years as a UFO researcher. He lives in Houston, and he has basically been collecting implants and people with them in them for a long time, and had never been able to find anyone really willing and open-minded enough to do this surgery. Because, you know, most doctors are they're good scientists, but they don't have the vast amount of knowledge that you see just flowing out of Roger's mouth.
Okay, so I now see the connection. Dr. Lear, I have a question for you. A surgeon, and there are thousands of them across the country, who would remove something like this from somebody without the background of knowledge of the abduction, what would they likely do? Would they just send this thing off to pathology? Would they simply throw it away? What would be the disposition probably in a simple outpatient surgical procedure?
That's a very good question, Art, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the same thing that I did basically for 27 or 28, 29 years before I ever got into this. You take something out, and you have the welfare of the patient at heart.
Of course.
So your main concern is to get this thing set into a laboratory, and you're interested is basically two things. Is it going to cause any damage to the patient?
Right.
And is it benign, or is it malignant, and is it out?
Right.
And then if it comes back, the whatever way it comes back, we don't care what happens to it. It's gone. Throw it away. So you can just imagine across the land, across the world, how many things have been thrown away of interest, and I may be guilty.
In other words, it's anomalous. It's something anomalous, but from the physician's point of view or the surgeon's, it's benign, and so it was some anomalous material. They don't care. It's benign, thank God. It's not cancer, and you're done.
That's it. It didn't belong there. I took it out. No more pain. Goodbye.
Uh-huh. Remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And you have done, in your career, a good half dozen of these now?
Well, we've done seven cases so far. Now, I want to go back to your original question about Daryl. Daryl and I have become formed a partnership, and we want to pursue this investigation. And because of our relationship, we realized some time ago that you can't do this kind of stuff without funds. We basically were supporting this out of our pockets, and I'm not a rich feller, and neither is he. So we formed an organization which is nonprofit, called the Fund for Interactive Research in Space Technology, or the acronym is FIRST. And FIRST went ahead and tried to raise some funds from various sources and get some backdoor stuff done. And I'm sure you, amongst anybody, will realize that backdoor stuff just doesn't cut it.
Right.
You can't get the interest of the scientific community, and people owe you favors, and they do you favors, and they're well-meaning and nice, but you're never going to get an article in a scientific journal.
When you discuss this with your colleagues, what sort of general reaction do you get, Doctor?
Well, I thought that, you know, at first I was reticent to even let anybody know, you know, what I was doing, and I appeared on various television programs as Dr. X and Dr. Sam and Dr. This and Dr. That, but finally I sort of came out of the closet. I was very surprised that nobody made any comments, so when you do this, you need a lot of consulting people because, you know, I'm in my specialty. You may need somebody that's, you know, a neurosurgeon. Somebody may claim they have something in the head, or you may want to look at a chest cavity or even GU problems that occur. So I've had to ask, you know, colleagues, but let me tell you this, across the board, I really haven't had anybody that's ever snickered. They're all extremely interested, and that is, to me, was a very, very big surprise.
I'm finding that, too, in the scientific community here in Texas. People are very interested, and now that they're beginning to get their hands on material objects to work with.
Yes, hard evidence.
Hard evidence. There's really not a lot of resistance to that at all. I mean, if there's anybody who wishes there was, they're going to have a big surprise, because the average scientist that I talk to is fascinated and eager to work on this.
So you might say we've gotten ourselves into the physical evidence business.
Right.
and because we're using, you know, we're really trying to marry hard science to a field that they have never really looked at before. And because of our relationship with, like, the Bigelow Group, we did get funding from Bob Bigelow. And we were able to use laboratories like Los Alamos, New Mexico Tech, University of California, and a number of, you know, world-renowned laboratories. Because of this, we have gained the favor and trust of a lot of individuals who have materials that they would not relinquish to anybody else. They have turned them into us for analysis. We keep their identities strictly secret, and the results of whatever we find is only released back to the person. If they want to release it to the rest of the world and they do not have fears, we do that. One of the things, just among many I want to mention, is that we have a piece of glass that has this came out of a window, and embedded into this glass is a impression of two little hands and an arm. And this was taken from the bedroom of an abductee.
Oh, my. Doctor, very quickly, because we're short on time this hour, is there a way people who think they have implants can contact you?
Yes, Art.
How?
They can get me on my email, which is rklear, L-E-I-R, first. That's 1-S-T at AOL.com.
Okay, that's rklear, L-E-I-R, first, the number 1-S-T?
That's correct.
At AOL.com.
Or they can call me at 805-495-2613.
Give that number again, please.
805-495-2613.
Well, this has been absolutely remarkable. Doctor, thank you for being with us this morning. And I'm going to have you back on if we can do that.
Oh, that would be wonderful, Art. And just take 2 seconds if people want to...
Doctor, we're okay. Way out of time.
Okay, Art.
Thank you, and good night.
Art Bell is taking your calls on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is, and what a fascinating time with Dr. Roger Lear. I would like to add that Dr. Lear is apparently going to make an appearance on Hard Copy this Tuesday, CBS at 7:30 p.m., or depending on where you are in the nation, check your guides. At any rate, Hard Copy this coming Tuesday if you would like to see Dr. Roger Lear. What an hour that was, huh? Whitley Strieber back with us in a moment. Now you know considerably more about implants than you did before, I should say. Folks, if we are a very mobile nation, we move a lot. We move around a lot. And so a lot of times children, I'm a classic case, are not close to their parents. Thousands of miles are, you know, in between. Now, I would like to suggest to you that Thanksgiving is coming up, as you, I hope, know, next Thursday. Now, I have an idea for you. If you cannot be with your parents, if you cannot be with your family, here's an idea. Send flowers. You know why? Because even though you're not there, and even though they're having Thanksgiving dinner, your presence will be all around them. I mean, simply all around them. It's that has that much impact. When you send absolutely fresh flowers, a flower company that really is a flower farm, all they grow is miniature carnations. They do one thing, and they do it very well, and they sell them to you wholesale. And the deal is sweet and simple, $42.95, and you get this gigantic shipment of flowers sent anywhere in the contiguous USA, delivered next day by FedEx. Now, you can call them tonight and arrange to have them delivered just before Thanksgiving. Inside this big triangular box is a note from you saying, "I wish I could be there, Mom or Dad," which is the sweet thing to do, you know. But think of me when you look at these. I don't know. I just made that up. Whatever message you would want to send, with your name at the bottom, all handwritten, very personal, very emotional, and extremely effective. Thanksgiving. You can order now while you're thinking about it, you know, otherwise you forget it. The number is 1-800-562-6438. 1-800-562-6438. Well, of all the offers that I have ever heard a guest make on this program, I have never, this really is a first in all the years that I've been doing this program. Nobody has ever offered a product or tape that actually would allow you, if you have the cojones for it, to have a close encounter. A Whitley's tape, which has never touched the public hands before, does that. Actually, it does two things. It's called Pure Balance, and it will either put you in a condition where you will be subject to, or will be able to have a close encounter. Or if you have one and you don't want it anymore, to get out of it. It's called Pure Balance. It's a videotape. It'll be autographed personally. Each box is going to be autographed personally. Whitley's about to find out what it's like to autograph a gazillion tapes. And that's, I would say, quite a catch. I've never heard this offered before, ever. And I've talked to a lot of people. It's $24.90. And it's a good 24-hour number you can call. I'm going to give you the number now. But if you don't want to deal with a machine, you can call during the day in order and talk to a human being. About 2 weeks for delivery, because he'll be signing his little hand away. The number to call right now or later today. But remember, this has not been offered before. It's offered now on my program. You're not going to hear it again. It's 1-800-350-4639. 1-800-350-4639. You can either try now or later today. Now, back to Whitley Strieber. Whitley, what an hour that was.
What an amazing hour.
Yeah.
He is an example of a real scientist who is finally taking an interest in this subject and coming up with hard evidence. It is hard to deny this. I mean, it's... And, you know, to those who, like me, are out there who think they may have implants in their bodies, I have been living with this thing, consciously living with it for 10 years, since, or more than that now, since 1986.
Get good and close to the phone for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Since 1986, and I have I've come through it. And what worries me about the whole implant issue is that it's a very frightening thing to think that you may have something like this in your body, or in some cases I know people whose kids have them in their bodies, and yet at the same time we're all surviving. People are developing different ways of coping with this, and part of this whole experience is realizing first that we're not maybe completely in control of things as we thought we were, and we're not in the driver's seat around here as nearly as much as we thought. But part of it is realizing that we can get back into that situation. You can gain a lot of control over your relationship with the visitors. It's amazing. It's possible to do. But I worry about people panicking over this. I don't want that to happen. The work Lear is doing is really solid. The man is, he's ending the argument about whether or not something strange is happening to people and going into their bodies, because it's true, it is. I was present at three of the surgeries that he did, and I found it to be so emotionally moving, I actually had to leave during part of it because it was overwhelming to me. It was overwhelming to my wife Anne as well, because for her, she's never had many experiences, and she's a very practical, down-to-earth person. To see these objects coming out of people we knew was incredible. What an extraordinary experience.
Yes.
And then I started working, trying to have an implant removal program, and we were all set to go. We had, if you can believe it, in the 2 or 3 days, I put this on my website, there were 125 emails from people with strong evidence of implants in their bodies. And then the funding fell through at the last minute. And we'll do it again. I mean, I'm going to get the funding, and we'll do the program. But I just want listeners to know that there are an awful lot of people out here who are surviving with these in their bodies and living perfectly normal and good lives. Me included.
Yeah, you included. It's not had a profound effect on your life, so I guess if that's normal, it's normal. But
well, it's something I would like to be in control of. I would like to know exactly what these things are doing, and if they can be gotten out. And I want to be able to make an intelligent choice about that too. And it's people like Lear who are going to help us do this.
Indeed. All right. Oh, let's switch gears a little bit. I wanted, and it looks like we will have the time. There is, Whitley, there has been something going on in Mexico.
Yes.
Now for years, literally, I think years, that is just almost indisputable. There have been so many UFOs, so many anomalous objects in Mexico. We have reports from reliable sources that airliners have collided with the damn things.
That's right.
There has been damage documented to airliners. The pilots down there don't have the same fear, apparently, that our pilots do here, nor do the air controllers there. And the reports coming from Mexico are just unbelievable. And I know you've done something on this. What do you know?
Oh, yes. Well, I've been working on this for a few years since I met Jaime Maussan, who is the Mexican newscaster who first became involved in this back in 1991 when they had an eclipse there, and there were some very unusual objects videotaped during the eclipse by people who were watching the eclipse. In the U.S., these were said to be images of the planet Venus.
Mm.
It turned out, however, that Venus was not in the same area of the sky as the sun. And one or two researchers even went so far as to say that you could make video of Venus that looked just like the objects that they had videoed down there. So I went out to do this because I was eager to disprove this video if I could, as I am with every piece of evidence I get. And it turned out that the images of Venus that you take with a video camera are nothing like the objects that were filmed down there. That was just the 1991 episode.
You know, I've thought for a long time that the reason we don't see a lot of anomalous objects in the sky, even at night, is because we don't look up. Now, during an eclipse,
everybody looks up.
Everybody's looking up.
And there was this huge response. Everybody was looking up. Jaime was on television from they have programs there that go on until interest dies down, call-in television programs.
Right.
And this was a program that normally ended at 2 o'clock in the morning, I believe it was. Finally, everybody in Mexico became so exhausted trying to get through to the program, they gave up and it ended. There was that much interest. And the result, I think there was a response, because subsequently, since then, Mexico has had the most extraordinary series of UFO encounters and films and videos ever made. Some of the material is available here in the United States in a couple of videos distributed by Britt and Lee Elders,
yes,
called Masters, I believe, of the Stars. And but much of it still has not been seen. Remarkable pieces of video. One is a video of an apparent alien, which is as close to being authentic as anything we have. It's a remarkable little piece of video taken by a woman at night who came home to find this strange glowing in her backyard. Now, what makes it so incredible is that the night before, there had been a UFO hanging over the town of Metepec where this video was made. And it had been observed on the Mexico City tower radar, as well as observed from the town of Tula nearby visually by air traffic controllers. And like you say, unlike it. And they told Jaime Maussan all about it. So
now, Jaime Maussan, for those who don't know, did the equivalent of 60 minutes, in fact it was called that, I think, in Mexico.
That's right.
For years and years. So he was a Class A anchor.
Absolutely, the Mike Wallace of Mexico.
Sure.
And he still is. Jaime and I are together fairly frequently, and when he comes up to San Antonio, when we go out to the 8:30 Mexicana flight back to Mexico City to take him to the plane, everybody on the flight immediately recognize him. He's a superstar in Mexico. In any case, here's what happened after the UFO was observed over Metepec. The next night, the lady took this video of this strange thing. The next day, they found that a cornfield where the creature had been moving toward was all trampled down.
Mm.
Now, incredibly, over the next few weeks, the tower kept reporting to Jaime that this UFO was reappearing in different places around the area. He took it and went to each coordinate that the tower had given him, and in each place found the same thing. The crops had been crushed and trampled under the area where the UFO had appeared. It's a remarkable story.
Did they do, in this country and England, when they have crop circles and crops are affected one way and another, Dr. Levengood and others examine the crops sometimes and not find that there are molecular changes that cannot be accounted for in any way at all, at least in what are considered to be legitimate crop circles. Obviously, there are some fakes, but they have found these definite molecular changes.
Oh, yeah, it's gotten to the point where it's relatively easy to tell the difference between the wrecks. I don't know how aware they were of the crop circle research at the time that this happened, but there was something found anyway that was quite exciting. He has sent me some video of this, and it's a most remarkable thing. It's a pumpkin plant that has got... It's some kind of a bizarre hybridized plant that it was in the middle, sitting there in the middle of one of these fields. It was just completely inexplicable. And unfortunately, the plant itself has been destroyed because of the passage of time and the lack of awareness at the time of the plant. So all that exists, remains of it, is the video. And it's a most unusual video. There's also the video of the night, which is on my tape, by the way.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yes. It had Jaime gave me permission to use it.
And that's on the tape you're talking about, the one we're offering?
Yes, it is. I said there were some surprise videos on it, and believe me, they are a big surprise. I'm not interested in little surprises. This is a big surprise.
All right. When we come out of the... half hour here, I would like to do what we haven't done all night, and that is take some calls for you. I'm sure that there are plenty of questions that have been generated throughout the
system. Sure. Always look forward to it.
Anyway, you're really going to autograph all these tapes, huh?
Well, if it takes longer than 3 weeks, 2 weeks to get them, it'll be sort of...
All right. All right, Whitley, hold on. He really will do that. And... Whitley, you want to be sure not autograph. You know, videotapes are shrink-wrapped a lot of times.
I'm going to get the flat boxes to autograph.
And so you're going to autograph the box itself.
That's correct, yes. The boxes will be autographed.
Excellent. All right. This tape is called Pure Balance, and you want to order it by that name. Pure Balance. Art Bell is calling it Pure Dynamite because that's obviously what it is. $24.90. $24.90. That includes the... you know, the shipping and handling to get it to you. And the number, again, is 1-800-350-4639. Footage never, ever seen by the American public before that Woodley's been holding on to. And I think the most dynamic part of it is, if you want it, it will lead you toward a way to having a close encounter. My only caution would be, be careful what you wish for. But as far as an opportunity to get, you know, this tape, even if you get it, don't look at it, put it in the corner and wait, I'd do it now. 1-800-350-4639. We'll be right back.
Taking your calls on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and my guest is Whitley Strieber. What an amazing night this has been once again, huh? Anyway, we are going to take calls coming up in a moment. All right, now, back to San Antonio, Texas, and a man who has just about done it again, that has made it through the full program, Whitley Strieber. You're really...
Too many unusual things happened to me in the night, the sleep break. Soundly, fine, I like it.
All right, well, it's the first caller line, top of the morning. You're on the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, where are you?
I'm calling from northern Minnesota.
Okay.
Let me make this real quick. Last year, pretty close to this time, early December, I sent something to you, Mr. Bell, and your through the internet, and I put the topic Strieber. I don't know if you had gotten it to date. I know you're a busy man along those lines. I had met both of you in San Diego around 1975, and I had, I'll just go along the lines of word of knowledge, premonition, so to speak. About 2 years ago, I was sitting around late at night, about 2:30 in the morning, feeling no pain, just sitting around, just on an average night. And the strangest thing happened. I had just previous, about 3 weeks before, picked up a reel-to-reel, a tape recorder. Never ran through it, figured out how it worked and everything like that. But I had gone to various garage sales and picked up a bunch of old 8-track tapes because I figured the tape was about the size that would be close. So in patching together all this tape work, I had two 10-inch reels, blanked both sides out, and had an argument with the girl I was living with at the time as, do you love this machine more than me kind of thing. Well, the oddest thing is I finally figured out how the controls work, the simul sync and everything like that.
Yes.
Recorded a couple of songs. And late one night, before I had even plugged it into the back of a quad receiver, I half-jokingly, sitting on a couch, when she said, well, you're going to crash tonight or what? I said, yeah, give me a minute. I set it, blanked the tape out, and there's a little arm that you kick up to kick the motor and drive.
Yes.
And she yelled at me again, and I just went off to bed. Was the next morning, she said, you know, I know you got back up. You got off the couch, and I heard you playing with your blankety-blank reel too. I said, no, I never touched it. Argued for about 3 days, make a long story short, about 3.5 weeks later, after I blanked out the rest of the tape, flipped over a 10-inch reel, I came across these three sounds. And in reference to the internet message that I sent to you, I have no idea where they came from. I thought at first maybe it was not hooked up.
Well, you might be surprised, caller, to know that your story is not unusual, and there are many, many people who have recorded things on electromagnetic tape that simply can't be accounted for. It's an intelligence to the realm of video, of course.
Did you send those sounds to me?
No, I think he sent them to me, Whitley, and I don't recall them.
Because somebody sent me some absolutely extraordinary sounds, and I have we somehow or another misplaced the tape, and it's something that I have regretted losing for about 2 or 3 years.
Well, again, I'm going to remind you to stay close to the phone for me, and if that's the case, then give your email address out, and maybe you'll get another copy.
Well, they have to send it to my snail mail address, which is 5928 Broadway.
Wait a minute, 5928 Broadway?
Broadway.
Uh-huh.
San Antonio, Texas, 78209. And I must apologize to everyone who tries to send me email. I strip my messages once a week, and it usually, and then people can't get through. It's just overwhelming, and I can't deal with it. It has to come by snail.
Okay, I'm having exactly the same problem with email. I don't even know how to deal with it. It's anyway, your snail mail is Whitley's
78209.
All right, so send them again, caller, and Whitley will deal with them, so will I. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Okay, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, okay.
And I work for a major U.S. carrier. I've been with a carrier for 18 years.
Aircraft carrier?
U.S. carrier, yes.
Okay.
I hesitate to mention the name of the airline.
That's all right, don't.
Okay, so 1994, I'm in the evenings, received a call in a reservation center from a gentleman. I pulled up an itinerary, and we have extensive information about the passengers that's confidential.
Sure.
Had an extensive world itinerary, global. At that time, I took the call and helped him. It was about a 30-minute call involved, and it was very extensive, very detailed. At the time, I saw that this gentleman worked for the Department of Defense.
Okay.
And we developed a rapport on the phone. I helped him, cordial. I asked him a question. I don't know why, but I asked him the question. Can you tell me anything about hesitated. There was about a 5-second pause. Now, I know this gentleman. He knows me. He does not know me, and I don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled an allegory. He said, imagine if you are starting to raise a plant from a seedling, mm-hmm. and you watch it, and you fertilize it, you water it, you let the sun come in, you protect it, and you study it. And then he stopped. I said, is that us watching someone else, or is someone else watching and protecting us? Or what? And he said, I think the latter.
Hmm.
And then I asked him, is there any literature that you could recommend? Now, this gentleman works for the Department of Defense. He's all over the world, and he states, get the book Communion.
Great.
That blew my mind. My hair stood up on the back of my neck.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I've always been a skeptic. But I don't know what happened that night, but we connected. He had no reason to tell me that. Now, and my question is, can you comment on that? Do you have any contact, or has there been any contact with the government and you and your dealings with these situations that you can talk about?
Well, that's a great story, number one. And number two, it's a great question. Whitley, has there been any contact between you and any official representative of the government, either that was apparent to you through a presentation of identification or...
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure, is the answer?
Yeah.
Really?
No, it's been, there's been, with more than one, there's been quite a number of people over the years came up to my cabin to either to just have the experience of being there or get into contact, try to get into contact. And, you know, behind the scenes in the government, and not even very far behind the scenes, but just immediately beneath the surface, there are, I think, many, maybe most senators know about that this is, there's something in this, and a lot of people in the Congress and their staffs, as well as the intelligence community. So yeah, there's lots of people. I have my attitude about this is, and in other, from other countries as well, that if they want to make their names public, it's up to them, and because I have respect their confidentiality, and they know that. But there have been, and there have been some people from the U.S. Senate and from the House in the United States, and a few people from the intelligence community. It has been a couple, because there was a period of time when they were investigating some people in the investigating whether or not the intelligence community was withholding information from them about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 2 years being questioned about where I got the information for my book, Majestic. And that was hard. It was never unpleasant, but it was clear. I mean, they did mention that they had... In my opinion, there is a level of the government that knows a great deal about this, but it's isolated from the part of the government that we see. And it's hidden so well that not even the people who are overseeing the intelligence community can find it. And people like the director of the CIA, they know it's there, but they can't track it down. There's like within the defense industry. And a lot of the funding that goes through the black budget into defense industry projects and ends up redirected into this area, it's invisible to the people who are trying to control it.
All right.
That would be my short answer.
All right. No, that's just fine. I had an interesting guest I'll tell you about the other night, David Adair.
I know David well.
You know David well?
Sure.
He testified in front of Congress, a closed thing for Stephen Greer and CSETI, and he said the young representatives, congressmen, senators, when they heard this, their mouths and senators acted as though they were hearing something they already knew about.
Well, I think that the three senators, Byrd and Senator Moynihan,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
I wouldn't doubt that for a second. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi.
Hi from Chicago. I had a very strange experience, and first of all, my question is, if you can put things into the body, can you take body parts out? And I know this sounds strange.
Well, are you asking, can the visitors take things out?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, before we answer that question, you have to tell us why you asked it.
Okay, well...
Great.
First of all, I'm in my 40s, and when I was 7 or 8 years old, I had it was either a dream or something I saw on TV where I went into the ground. I know this is going to sound strange, but I go into the ground, and I can't remember a lot of it except I'm still there, and that's really all I remember. And about 20 years ago, when I had my youngest child, I went in to have a tuberoscope to make a small incision. You're totally sedated. And when they went in, they found that I had one fallopian tube, one ovary, one ureter, and one kidney.
Oh, my God.
And they sent me to a kidney specialist, and they have no scientific explanation as to why I just have one kidney, because usually one is diseased or whatever. And I'm wondering if, can you know, would they, have you ever heard of something like
that? Now I surely understand why you asked the question. Yes.
And I'm perfectly healthy, by the way. I've never, ever had a problem with anything. So I just, you know, and I, every now and then I have, you know, dreams about what I feel was a dream.
Do you want to know what really happened?
What?
I'm asking you. Do you want to know what really happened? You told me you had this dream or this sense that you were in a laboratory with strange people, right?
Well, exactly.
Do you really want to know what happened?
Yes.
There are ways to find out, Woodley.
Well, there are a number of ways you can... one of the things you can do, you can use meditation, you can try hypnosis. We're working on the possibility of using the biology of the brain to tell us whether or not memories that is stored are real or dreams or false memories, but that's still a little bit in the future. It's a struggle, personally. It's a great struggle for me, for everyone who are having close encounters, to tell the difference between dreams and encounters, and then to remember the encounters. It's really hard, especially if you try hypnosis. Try it with somebody who's very objective, who doesn't have any set beliefs about this, and remember that the first time or two will be the best, and then after that, maybe it'll trail off in terms of its freshness and immediacy. But you'll be able to tell the difference when your imagination starts to take over.
Okay.
Tough business to find out what's going on with this. As far as the disappearing body parts or non-existent body parts, that's a very unusual one. It's not one that I've heard of before. It may not be related to this experience at all. It could just be a natural phenomenon.
But it's awfully interesting. So if you do take the trouble to go to a regressive hypnosis, I would be most interested in knowing the results.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. That's a strange one.
Really is, yeah.
And it's an interesting question. If they can put things in, I suppose they could sure take things out. And specifically, the thing she's missing... well, I'll wait until we get the results. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber and Art Bell. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I'm calling from Fresno, California.
KFRE country. Yes, sir.
There you go. Yes, I have two questions for your guest, Mr. Bell.
All right, you're going to have to speak into your phone good and loud.
Okay, I have two questions for your guest, Mr. Bell.
Go.
Yes, first of all, a few years ago, I had a dream where I was starting to float out of my body. I know you guys have heard that before. But the unusual thing was that two white hands touched my cervical or neck area. And then I, after that, the dream was over, but it just felt like I was in a suspended state and or something else is trying to make contact with me or had an interest in me or what.
Okay, then the advice to you is just like we gave to that young lady, depending on whether you want to know more or not.
And also, have you gentlemen had experiences... Or do you have anything on videotape where an object will fly along? I've seen these over Fresno a few times, where an object will fly along maybe between 40 to 60 miles an hour. It emits a pulsating glow, then maybe from time to time it may emit a giant shower of sparks.
Well, I don't know about that specifically, but we have reams and reams and reams of videotape of anomalous flying objects.
There is some videotape that I have not seen yet that's just been made in Scotland of objects that are like whirling groups of lights, but I don't think there's also plenty of video of objects that are pulsating, but nothing of of anything emitting a shower of sparks that I am aware of.
Whitley, did you think really hard before deciding to release this Pure Balance tape?
Yeah, I made it about a year ago, and I was all set to release it, but I then held it back because I wanted to spend some time with it and, you know, just leave it sitting for a while and then look at it again, because I've spent 10 years trying to make my Close Encounter experience work and be a little bit more coherent and trying to answer the questions of all the people who are curious about whether or not they could get into contact in any way.
Yes.
And, you know, I want the thing to be my best shot. And I think it is. That's why I've released it.
You are the first one. The first one in all the years that I've been doing this that has ever offered something of this sort to actually promote a close encounter, if that's really what you want.
If that's what you want, and also to get control of it or to get out of it.
To get out of it. Yeah, I hear more people wanting to get out of it, but inevitably when we do these programs, I get a lot of calls from people, I want to have it, I want to have an experience. And I've never been able to cozy up to that idea myself, but there are a lot of people who apparently want it and aren't afraid of it.
Well, I've always thought, you know, I know a lot of people who'd be willing to trade. Totally figure out how to
Apparently, it has been a particularly good one, and I'm going to see to it that it gets rerun on the weekend as well.
Great.
So, my friend, once again, thank you. There's a lot going on in this wide world, and you and I will get back together again and talk about it soon.
It's always great, Art.
Whitley, take care.
You too.
All right, that's Whitley Strieber, and the tape that we were just referring to is called Tape, Pure Balance. And you need to know that because that is what you need to ask for. Now, the offer obviously is good tonight, good today, good this weekend, because I'm going to ensure this tape is heard over the weekend as well when we do our normal replays. And the offer will be good whenever it is heard, but this has never been offered to the public before. And if I could rename it, I'd call it Pure Dynamite. It's $24.90, $24.90, and Whitley will autograph it for you personally. Shipping and handling, by the way. 1-800-350-4639. You can call right now. That's 1-800-350-4639, or there will be human beings to take your order. It's your one opportunity to get this, never before released, probably never again. 1-800-35- What a night. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night. Here's Hall of Fame.